that that will only go to do the presentation. DM.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to members of the council. And thank for letting the larger person to another meeting. As myself to introduce the subject of self as the young person, so that at least the members of the council should know what is contained in the report of the police. I'm very pleased to introduce to you this team led by National Commissioner who has come up with a strategic plan, annual performance and budget for 2013-2014 financial year that is responding to the expectations and the needs of the South African society that is consistent, changing and challenging. Our department's strategic and performance plan for this financial year has introduced no less than 16 new performance indicators, amongst others, on the understanding that the police service is all out people and service delivery. Measures of audits and monitoring have thus been improved. Just to mention a few, for example, to improve our capital and infrastructure management and to less diluting of the state of office, we will make sure budgeted big projects do not get ballooned out of proportion by the time this big project gets completed, as is happening in most of the departments and also our own department police. Chair, as you know that sector policing is a policing method targeting small vulnerable geographical areas within a policing precinct, involving all role players in identifying the particular policing needs in each sector, and addressing the root causes of crime as well as the enabling and contributing factors. We want to assure and make sure that effective crime prevention to introduce the levels of prioritized crime within the community and to improve community safety is in line with the partner theme of the year, of which I'm sure you're sure that the theme for the year is the year of the police station. Thus, the sustainable performance plan has to be shaped by the broader societal needs. It will also be noticed that every rent allocated to all our five main programs has been done so efficiently and equitably in meeting the national objective of our government that everyone in South Africa is and must be safe. With the new performance indicators, we are making sure that the department is constant attention to both planning and performance. So, Chairperson, with these few words that I've just said to you, I hope members of the council present here will see the effort made by the Department of Police that we are adapting, we are developing partnerships, we are creative, and we are finding more ways for the South African Police Service Program and service to be delivered more efficiently to all our people and community in South Africa. I think they will go deep into the programs that we have. I just highlighted those that I think that they needed to bring to attention because, as I have said, that we have about 15 of additional new indicators. Those that some of them highlighted, some I need. I'm sure that the National Commissioner, Mary Adier, will take us through with any other things that the committee would like to get from the police or hear from the police. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mary. Just relax. We are following with keen interest the happenings of the commission, and we hope that you will deal with them in such a way that the truth comes out as it is. And you know, when such things are happening, we read in the media every bad thing about the police as if they are not doing the good job of combating crime and arresting criminals. We are aware of the job that they are doing, and just hope that they continue doing that. Those things are just minor, and hope that they will survive and restore confidence in the SAPS. You can continue.
Chairperson, thank you very much for those kind welcoming words for all of us at SAP. And indeed, our commitment, as I said, remains unprovoked. We do know that law enforcement is not a non-negotiable. We also know that public order is the bedrock upon which strong democracies are built upon. So we do our best as a service to ensure that we continue to enforce the law and we continue to ensure that there is public order, because it is when we do so that the economic activities of this country can go on well unaffected, that the social lives of the citizens can continue to do what they are supposed to be doing, that as citizens we can continue to go about doing our business unaffected. And I do believe that even the challenges that we are having, the South African Police Service is doing a lot to ensure that South Africa Inc. continues to run. And for that, we will continue to work very hard. Let me thank you for inviting us to present our strategy, as well as the costing thereof, including how we hope to perform around the strategy. I would like to just say the team that we have here, you had requested that we bring the provincial commissioners. We have some of them here, and I'm sure they would be able to bring across to yourself some of the challenges that they are facing and how we are planning to mitigate those challenges. With me also are mostly the divisional commissioners. I brought the divisional commissioner for a very specific reason, because they are leaders of a very technical environment that roll out the actual implementation of our strategy. And I thought, rather than bringing in just the Deputy National Commissioner, it would have been good for you to engage with them as the sub-programmatic leaders to know precisely how they have planned those targets, and then you can get them from source to say how are they doing so. We are, of course, happy as a team that we are here with our leader, the Minister, to the Deputy Minister, to give us that backup and to build that bridge that connects us with yourself. How we will go through this presentation, we'll answer quickly because I heard that there's pressure for time. I'll quickly just indicate a few points around our strategic first. Then we will have a joint presentation by both our head of strategic unit, Nenziwa, and General Secretary will be looking at the costing of the aspect, and Nenziwa will be looking at the target. So those are the three parts that we'll be dealing with. Just from a strategic point of view, really, maybe to start off, I just want to highlight those aspects that are influencing our strategy. First is our own constitutional remedy, which is known to us, Section 205 of the Constitution. Then we also say it's not enough for us to understand the remit, but it's also important for us to really start dealing with that which is in challenge that you're reading about in the media. How do we deliver on our remit? The constitutional requirement that clearly, in a standing manner, gives us the values that we need to embrace as a public service in delivering our work. So we're starting to look quite very keenly at that Section 195 that is linked also to the Batho Bill principles that we know about. So we are really taking a special effort to look at how we deliver our services and the values that we embrace. Again, just want to bring to your attention once more that you know that there are three outcomes that the service is seeking to deal with. The first outcome is outcome three, that deals with the people of South Africa are and feel safe, and the priority input are outlined there. To achieve that, we are saying we need to reduce overall levels of serious crime. We secondly need to have to be an effective contributor towards the criminal justice system, because we are linked to that very chain. So we must make sure that we work very keenly on our part so that the criminal justice system can be successful. How we detect, how we investigate, how we deal with our forensic services, how we make sure that our files are ready for court and that court can be able to achieve conviction through our input. But the other important thing is how we connect with the other part of the value stream system and again continue to improve our JCPS engagement and collaboration. We are seeking also through that to reduce issues of corruption, both internally and within the broader system. And then the improvement of how we look, I mean, the service and the products that we deliver is consumed by 50 million citizens in this country, and we need to ensure that we reach out. And it's one area that I think the perception side of our offering needs to be looked into. And I'm sure when we start looking at what would be offered, we would be wanting to engage with the PES, our cake, to ensure that we dedicate resources towards improving the perception. But you can only improve it through peer and communication, but also in terms of the quality of our customer services. Then the issues around the managing our borders, again, it's in collaboration with other entities, Home Affairs, the Defense, ourselves, and all others that are involved in integrity of the identity and status of citizens, of the residents, and finally to ensure that the cyber environment is well also catered for and taken care of by policing services. Then the next outcome that we are also focusing on is outcome 11, which looks at enhancing African agenda and sustainable development. In that regard, we're looking at different contributions to the region. We are having a number of vehicles. SARPCO is one of those. We're an active participant in SARPCO, and we do allocate resources to ensure that SARPCO, the Association of Police Chiefs, in that we can work together in there. And as an association, we're reaching out to other associations in East, in Central, and North Africa, so that is also doing certain things for us. But we're also focusing a lot around the work that is being done by the operational side in terms of cross-border operations to ensure that we can work together even with a close neighbor. So there's quite some bit of activity around the enhancing of the agenda. I already touched on outcome 12, where we are talking about the value-based service delivery, efficient and effective development-oriented public service. So we are trying to give a lot of attention to that. We touch also on our strategy and our quality that we'll be sharing. It's also influenced by some of the issues that were raised in the State of the Nation address. First, the police visibility, the gender-based violence, which is, we started already on that one. We're pushing and we're enhancing what we have started. Once we embrace some of the needs and issues that are being raised around that rape, all the sexual offenses, the FCS units, I can just say, so far we have a unit in each of our clusters, all the clusters, we have 176 of them. You know, the clusters that we're having, and then we're looking at ensuring that each station has a victim-friendly offering. I think we're sitting at about 900 at this point in time, so rolling up to ensure that in all the 1,137 stations would be having those. And we continue to look at specialist training of our social workers and those who are offering services in that space. Public order policing was another area that was highlighted during the State of the Nation address. And in that regard, I'm sure you would see when targets are being mentioned that we taking public order to new heights. We're having a mixed model, enhancing our national mobile offering to ensure that we're able to respond locally to ensure that the provincial commissioner has an excellent offering. They're able to deploy public order police for activities in their own provinces, but at the same time, General Mawela nationally would have an enhanced offering with more public order people that are mobile. And in the JCPS cluster, we have an initiative where we're saying that offering should have dedicated practice, dedicated courts, dedicated magistrates, support from our crime intelligence, so that when they say something is happening at Misty, that consolidated offering could move there, do what they are supposed to do, arrest who are supposed to arrest, and ensure that cases are investigated, can go to court and things would happen. So that's the new development. I think we would be dedicating resources towards that. So I think there's serious enhancement in that state. Fighting of corruption remains crucial. So the ACTT, the anti-corruption task team, also is an offering that we think might do more. We're starting to see more arrests. We hope they can accelerate that because as such we have a lot to support around the action in fighting corruption. There are bills that were part of the State of the Nation address where we are looking at also a role we would play as such to ensure that such implemented and enforcement takes place in there. The gender equality bill that talks about 50-50, we will also be looking at it from a subs point of view. I think we're sitting at about 37%. It's an area that we're keeping an eye on, balancing that space, and I'm sure General Mazikiwe in his strategy is taking care of those type of things. But also, it's beyond just the representation. We know that that bill is also... In that bill also lies what DGI has done, that they be equaled are no longer just for business, but they are also for departments. So they have to start looking at how we roll out the transformation in terms of how we buy our skills development and all those type of issues. So all the transformational aspects, both from the bill as well as from the revised BE codes of DGI, would sit in that space. Youth employment, focus on rural employment. The ARP strategy, I'm sure they will also talk a lot around that, where we are even starting to say recruitment of new members should not just be a subs issue. We would like to involve communities because that's the only way that we can start recruiting specifically for some of those rural environments where we don't have to recruit RIA to go and work at Mashabatini because it doesn't understand Mashabatini stays in Mashabatini for 2 years and wants to leave. But if we recruit maybe locally, we may start having better stability in terms of those people that are there. But we'll be looking at other multiple platforms that we're having within SAPS to look at how we can also make our contribution to youth employment. The National Development Plan, what we are starting to do is to unpack and interpret what the plan is saying to us and to start working out an operational and implementation plan that is both progressive and fair. So we have taken that into account in our planning also. The SAPS supporting the vision for a better Africa in a better world, again, our deployment in AU, our involvement in Interpol, and we're also hosting the first international conference for women police in the world on this continent sometime in September. So we're really reaching out also positioning subs out there. And BRICS aspects are also touched on there, maintaining police inflation, issues around foreign policy, and how we work within those joint teams that are involved with BRICS. So I will not touch on those elements of the National Development Plan, but safe to say that we have embraced those, and we're starting to look at elements that are in the plan that we're already having sub-programs for and enhancing those and looking at the gaps, ensuring that we can also be responsive around those various aspects. That's going to preoccupy us quite a lot in the next coming years. Then we also take into account the Minister's 10-point plan because he has articulated clearly some of the things that we need to focus upon in delivering our services. We've integrated those into our strategy. We've also gone further to unpack each of those points that he has raised so that it starts having a common meaning to all of us. The first one is around effective transformation. For an example, we will link it with the 50-50
that we've already mentioned. We will also link it up with the DGI Code of Good Practice. So already it talks to some of the government priorities that have been articulated and the plans that he's having. Issues around smarter policing and engagement of the criminal justice system. You see the consistency in terms of some of the issues that I raised earlier on. So we are again discussing what our contribution to the criminal justice system will be, and how do we refine our contribution, our pathway? How do we ensure that that 7.10 of the criminal justice system talks to what the minister is saying here, talk to our strategy? So all these things are being integrated. Ensuring that the pace of building new police stations is accelerated. Indeed, infrastructure development in policing is important. We haven't as yet had our infrastructure listed as part of the six of Minister Patel. We're working at that so that we can get our infrastructure program, like that of education, like that of higher education, being part of the CIPs in Minister Patel's 17 CIPs program. So we're busy working on that. We've also refined our process of identifying those police stations that we need to build. And one of our things is that there should be sustainability in identification of priorities and continuity. It mightn't be that when Pierre comes, the priorities change. Tomorrow, when Deputy Minister Solu comes, the priorities change. There must be consistency. And if there is variation in the process, there must be methodology of varying the process, because doing so, you delay delivery and access to people who have had expectations. So that's some of the things that we're building into our process of infrastructure. We also note in that infrastructure, as General Cruz, I would say, or General Chavalala, we're visiting our stations. We're starting to look at the state of our stations. The issue of the year of the frontline office, we're saying the conditions of service for our members are also critical in terms of motivating them. So where they work, it matters. We have challenges with DPW. We are talking through those challenges. Part of the proposals would note, perhaps I don't know, may have not have time to touch on this, to say, give us an enlarged maintenance quantum. We are now allowed about 100,000 for a station to do the minor repair. We're saying, because you are not even capacity to send us, maybe give us 500,000 so that we can source people to do that for our station, so that members don't need without toilets, with broken doors, with broken windows, which we could do locally and even get local communities to participate in assisting us in those, because those services are there. So that's part of what we're looking at in terms of ensuring that the building of our stations and the repairs and maintenance of our stations is taken care of. I've already touched on the acceleration of the implementation of public order policing. We've made progress. The provinces can be able to, they have their own capacity, but now we're now enhancing this national mobile capacity. Indeed, we do have to look at our equipment also in that space. We know that our nyalas are aging and they are old. We need to look at what new generation vehicles are going to have in that regard. And once we're waiting for those, how do we ensure that we have sufficient resources for maintenance of that which we are having? So our strategy and our costing will be touching on those. The environment around the crime intelligence, certainly we need to strengthen that on a number of fronts, ensuring that we can have an astute crime intelligence environment. Training is critical. We need to start investing more resources in that space, and that is an area that we've also resourced. The next area is capacitating and risk. I've spoken already around the re-establishment of the Family, Child and Sexual Offences Unit. It's really prodding along well.
We hope to maintain the gains that we've had and put in some more resources so that we can optimize our successes in that state. StopTax unit is one of the key offerings for our rural policing. We are looking at that. The pilot that has been done by General Ntima and his team, we are looking at enlarging that scope of the pilot, because we've seen some successes in that pilot, and then we can go into further rolling out, and that would require resources on its own. Focus recruitment of personnel to attract appropriate skills. In there also we'll be looking at issues of disciplinary, ensuring that the quality of person we have and the quality of police members, you know, is the one that we are needing to have in the organization. So we would have to look a lot at our recruitment approaches, and that will also be resourced. For instance, we are looking at even refurbishing our assessment center, which I believe is one of the best in the in government. We have a very a good state-of-the-art assessment center that was funded by some donors some years ago. It's starting to get old, so it's one of the things that we will be budgeting for in the new year to improve. But the issue of attracting appropriate skills becomes very crucial. I was, for instance, in a meeting 2 days ago with EHW, and my big question was, a social worker is a social worker, a social worker, a psychologist. When we rank them, we make it difficult for them to come and service the mentor, because the mentor would be saying, why am I serviced by a kennel social worker? Why don't you give me a general social worker? So those are some of the things we're looking at in terms of appropriate skills and how we handle those appropriate skills. And we can look at departments such as defense on how they handle those special skills. So those are some of the things that we're looking at. Effective training and staff, I do want to say we will continue to allocate significant resources to our training environment, not only in terms of POP, but in all the areas, because the training is very critical in assisting us to deliver the services and the products that the communities consume. Command and control, professionalism, accountable policing, I think with all of us, what we've observed, what we've seen in the media, one can almost say at this point in time, it is non-debatable that that's an area that we need to put more money into to ensure that we have better discipline, we have better professionalism, there is transparent, accountable policing, and that where we have bad apples, we deal with them, so we need to put money into that. So we would be having, there are programs where we've looked at, some of the incidences that are sitting, old cases of people who may be sitting with old convictions. We need to look at those, and we need to look at how we deal with them, because we must get alignment with our own policies within stuff. So we will be putting some resources around there. There are a lot of change management issues that we need to deal with. I have been asking, for instance, the question that we've managed over 10 or 9 agencies. Have we ever gone, taken a process forward to say, what are our new culture and the new stuff? Part of which maybe is what we are rating here, because we are having 200,000 individuals, maybe not talking to a common culture. How do we give fit and health to our code of conduct? So we may invest some resources around the change management process for us. We've had our very first meeting with the top 1,500 leaders of SAP, starting from the station commander through to the general. So we set under one roof to start saying, what does it mean to be for this service? What is expected of us? So those are some of the change management processes that will continue to grow within the organization. Rural safety, rural offerings, rural policing, and embracing, the safety and security needs of rural communities also sits in there. All those issues that I've mentioned influence our planning, which goes into 5 programs, and the 5 programs will be then presented to us. The five key programs that are influenced by all those, the administration. And in administration, we deal with issues of HR, we deal with issues of finance, we deal with issues of technology management, supply chain. Those are the issues that are sitting in the administration. You will hear how what we've allocated there and also the targets that we seek to achieve in that regard. We then go into operations, and in operations we have four programs. First one is visible policing, and in visible policing you will hear about the visible policing that deals with the uniformed members as such, as well as our operational response, our POPs and all those strategic units that we are having. The third one is the detective services, which focuses on detecting crimes. And in that area, we will be having our detectives, we will be having the forensic services. And even though we know that we have a new dispensation, DPCI would be part of those areas. You also would hear how we have allocated resources in that space and how we stand for targets coming out of it. The fourth area would be crime intelligence. On its own, we all know what it is. It's got the above-the-line intelligence issues and below-the-line intelligence issues. The covert aspects, which we will not report in this committee, but again, you would also have a feel of how we have done that. Then the fifth program is our protection and security services, both the PPS side of things and the PSS side of things and other related security services. So the presentation that you're now going to get is around how we have proposed to allocate resources to each of those areas. Chairperson, that's the background. I don't know if we have questions before we go to the allocation. In this regard, I think in the joint presentation, we will have a general sketch dealing with the money allocation and then the Major General Mizua dealing with the targeting side of things.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, National Commissioner. I'd just like to acknowledge our Deputy Minister as well as Chairperson and the members. Good morning. The National Commission has indicated a number of priorities, a number of objectives, and as embedded and documented in official documents of the Department and of Government. Now we get to the 2013-14 budget and MTF estimates, and I'm going to give you an overview in this regard before we get to the specific programs, so to speak. These figures have been incorporated into specific categories and templates as described by the National Treasury. So these categories, as you very well know from past experiences, prescribed as well as the guidelines according to which one has to present it in the estimates of national expenditure, the Red Group, and then also tabled in Parliament by the Minister of Finances and addendum to the Appropriation Act. Firstly, we would just like to again indicate and say that the E&E estimate of national expenditure according to the National Treasury Directive referring to 2013-14 amount to be appropriated for the vote 25 police, obviously subject to Parliament. It shows the expenditure allocation per program and sub-program, and then also the allocations are also categorized by means of economic classification. Now the one is the objective structure, the first one, and relate to your broader objective structure, and the second one relates to your goods and services structure. So you use the goods and services in order to achieve those broad objective or functions. Then together and integrated to that, one will find the strategic plan and specifically an annual performance plan according to a framework also provided by the National Treasury referring to amongst other resource aspects and overview of the 2013 budget and estimates. These estimates of national expenditure contains inter alia strategic overview, expenditure estimate and expenditure trend. What this in essence says is that there is high degree of integration between the ACP and between the estimates of national expenditure in terms of, you will find in the one some aspects that you will also find in the others. For instance, in the ACP, you will find the same, some of the same figure that you will find in the ENE, and in the ENE you will find some of the same performance indicators that you find in the ACP. And this integration is necessary according to the prescriptions of the National Treasury and promotes coordination as well as linkages in terms of performance and also funding. Now, if we look at the spending policy direction, taking into account of what the National Commissioner has already said, it refers to an increase in police access points on a geographical basis to improve police response time. In essence, the whole capital work program and also facilities that the police will have and will also establish in the forthcoming year in order to increase those access points of service delivery, so to speak. We will also maintain a level of spending to replace the border vehicles. Members of this committee who have come with us for some time now know we started off, I think, at 32,000 vehicles. We are far in excess of 40,000 vehicles at this point in time. General Kruger will be able to give the exact amount. So we've grown significantly in terms of our vehicles over the past number of years, also in accordance with the ratio of personnel. Then also provision for specialized equipment and training for detectives to enhance the process of investigation of crime. We've done whatever we could, and significant resources went into the whole investigative program, which includes the DPCI, it includes the general or the crime investigations or the old general detectives, although they don't like to be referred to as such, merely for distinguishing purposes, and then also the forensic science laboratory and also the criminal record center. In this regard, members are aware that we have really invested significant resources in order to enhance the whole pipeline effect and the investigative aspect regarding this. Then also training on various aspects of crime, including the aspects of crime intelligence gathering and analysis, very important aspects. Expenditure in relation to the deployment of new recruits. Members will recall that in the current financial year, we had some problems in terms of the budget cuts that we had to accommodate. And then initially we indicated that we will have to have a decline in numbers. Then eventually, because in recent years we had increases in numbers, approximately 80,000 people were added to the health establishment, plus 35,000 replacements. But in this budget we were able to maintain the figures on previous levels because we have reprioritized and we received a bit of funding in order to maintain those levels. So the levels will be maintained on the current levels and there won't be a decline in terms of the numbers of police, and we will stay in the vicinity of 200,000, in fact 199,996 as indicated in the EMD. Then, if we then go to the CJS, the implementation of an integrated criminal justice system to ensure a single coordinated management of the continuum of criminal justice and performance across the CJS utilization, essentially focusing on funding for the forensic services and border detective services environment with regard to crime scene management. This is specifically addressed at the CJS, where major portions of resources went into in terms of crime, to get the analysis and the whole crime scene management, the investigation of crime link, and also the databases, to get them into such a level that it will be able to address most exhibit as basically as they come in with minimum delay. Let me not elaborate on this, as General Ashlani and his colleagues will be able to do it much better than I can. Maintaining a specialized capacity that allows for interventions through external deployment. We deploy externally also in terms of policies to places such as Sudan, in the vicinity of 12 million per annum. It could be higher, it could be less, in conjunction with the United Nations, also in connection with the African Union, and it all depends on the actual number of people to be deployed per annum, and we provide for that as well. Implementation of the anti-corruption strategy through specific funding that allows for vetting of personnel through fingerprint testing as well as testing of all firearms. It is not merely vetting of personnel, but it is a very, very important objective and priority in the CI environment as well, the intelligence environment as well, and in general and global. It can elaborate quite extensively in this regard, and there's a whole program regarding vetting of personnel and then also setting of firearms by some of the environment. Then we look at the capacity of police stations to implement the service delivery improvement program. We're moving into a so-called frontline services year or number of years, multi-year scenario. And we will also be looking at that to see what can we do to make it more user-friendly. We already have some very good ideas. Funds are in the capital work program, and we will be looking especially at a community safety center environment in order to also improve that. General Motiba and his people currently are also refining the initiatives in this regard. Establishment of legal-friendly facilities, I think it speaks for itself. It has been a priority of the department, and you will find those kind of funds. The facility, the broader facility, you will find in the capital works program, and then you will also find some of the furniture and so forth inside the for those friendly facilities which will come from the visible environment. Investment in capital equipment in support of basic policing services. There's a number of capital equipment that we will have to buy in order to support basic policing services. It ranges from systems and IT up to other equipment, including radio equipment, that we must buy or must at least maintain in order to get to a scenario where we are supporting primary policing in this regard. Purchasing of firearms and ammunition to keep the ball rolling, so to speak, because we have to replace some firearms, old firearms, and also issue our new recruits with firearms, and also bought some of the older firearms, and we also need some ammunition, also for training purposes, because we are indeed using quite significant numbers of ammunition in order to train our people. Implementation of closed circuit television systems in high crime areas. This has been on the books for quite some time, and in some years it becomes more prominent, especially in certain specific locations where it is increasingly necessitated. Youth crime prevention and social crime prevention, we also have to engage in this regard. It's very closely related to also to other departments, such as social development and so forth, the probation system in DCS and so forth. So you do have the crime prevention scenario from a social nature that also has to be, will be addressed in this regard and has been on the books and the line item for quite some time. Further reinforcing of the Family Violence, Child Protection and Sexual Offenders Unit. Some of these members will remember we had them. They were dissolved. Those people were placed in stations as designated individuals. A decision was taken some time ago to re-establish them again because getting a focused approach in terms of such a specialized unit, it was found to work better, and they have to be re-established again. Specific attention was given to these FTS units and the Stockhead units as well on the investigative side. Since 2010-11, and we've expanded, and we will also be putting more resources into that. So to get again to the scenario which we previously had, which was very, very full, 200% resourced in terms of our FCS environment, obviously to serve a very important purpose of crimes against women and children. Then also, intensifying attention in relation to the firearms, liquor and second-hand goods control environment, relatively new environment, or not new environment, relatively new arrangements in this regard, and this will have to receive also prominence in order to address the specific causes, one can say, relating or eventually resulting in crime. In visas to mobilize communities, although we won't have so many in visas maybe as we sometimes have, but we have to provide the in visas because a very important aspect in your community to launch your safer festive season, to get the input in this regard. The fact of the matter is it forms part and parcel of the old CPF model, or relates to the CPF model, but you need to have the in visas. Then also we will have to focus on stock set units in terms of rural effectiveness. The strategy, General Motiba is very much more acquainted and qualified than I am to enlighten you more in this regard. But the fact of the matter is, this stock set units are not on the investigative side. They're on the preventative side, on the prevent. He has run two pilot projects, and we are looking at these pilot projects, and we have extended some of these pilot projects because the way forward will probably be also a preventive nature on stock set in certain areas, together with maybe other multidisciplinary environments such as detectives to address the whole issue of stock theft in certain demarcated focus areas where you will find a lot of stock theft in this regard. Then also further capacitation of the DPCI. DPCI has received, I think General Gramat will also elaborate, has received significant resources in recent years. And a very, very credible baseline in this regard. We will also go into specific arrangements regarding the DPCI in terms of the presence they receive. And obviously members who have been engaged in their new arrangements are acquainted with the prescripts that are quite relatively new in this regard. Then we will also have further rollout and implementation of the war room. General Mkubani has researched this aspect and will take it forward in order to establish a war room, or in membership being also referred to operational room. The fact of the matter is a center where you will have multidisciplinary functions and systems and info from where you can take decisions and deploy and exercise decision-making over policing initiatives. Strengthening of the equestrian capabilities. We will have to also start looking at the equestrian capabilities, especially in those areas where you have your rural safety plan, where you also have some of your stock areas. So that all of those environments are accessible by means of 4x4s or even 2x4s. One will have to start looking at how we can get them closer together, especially where you have now in the Lesotho area or wherever in Free State might have. Then also, conduct of high-risk operations, obviously it remains a very important aspect, quite of whatever nature, and I think it's self-explanatory of nature. Then also strengthening the resource capacity of the National Intervention Unit and Special Task Force in support of operational reaction services to police incidents of public disorder. We are building the program of the 3-year program in terms of the NIU and the FDF to buy them new personal equipment of a significant nature, which will even provide them with better capabilities. But we will also have to look at a higher deployment level, and we have had announced that we are going to provide in this regard. Then we will also have to see, especially in next coming MTS, I think General Mawela will allow me, if I say we have in the vicinity of, I think, 4,000 or 5,000Corps members at this point in time. Are we also going to extend those numbers in next MTS, although we haven't provided for extensive numbers in this because of the fact that it's to a certain extent the holding budget. But we will also be looking in this whole service delivery process environment about the deployment, and then also, as the National Commission indicated, the delivery arrangements, which are not merely of a singular nature, but also of a multidisciplinary nature. Then, those are some of the spending priorities we have in our environment. Now, if you will allow me, Chairperson, to move over to the general figures in this regard, and one will eventually see that we have a 7-year figure here, starting off at 9-10 up to 2015-16, exactly what is incorporated also in our red book on the ENE. We started off in 9-10 at 47.7 billion, going up to 53.5 and 57.5, and then in 12-13, the current financial year, 63.4, average annual increase of 10% from 9-10 to 12-13, and then also over the next MTS, starting from 12-13, it will give an average increase of 6.2%. It is lower than previously. Members are again just sensitized also on the fact that to a large extent they have been in the House when the economic outlook was presented, during the budget speech by the Minister of Finance, so they will actually also know that we are in a bit of a recessional scenario. But the fact of the matter is there's still 6.2% increases going from the 63.4 billion the current financial year to eventually 75.8 billion. Now, the growth rates in the previous 4 years were exceptional. In this year, it is an average growth rate of 6.2%, but at least it's a growth rate. And no cuts were introduced in the departmental budget. But this is here to indicate the end of the growth that we have to see. We will now look at the macro indicators and the reasons for growth in previous financial years. Now, what do we say? We say the baseline allocations over the period 13-14 to 13-16 have been amended and to the following extent. The changes to the baseline allocations as reflected in the 2012 EMD, the current document, not the new one, the current one, realized as a result of the following. The 2013 MTF allocations include amounts reprioritized within the baseline, amounts reprioritized to the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to improve the efficiency, some of the CJS funds are moved to them, of the criminal justice system, 300 million, 500 million, and 450 million, and new allocations of 1.2 billion to police for 13-14, 1.466 million, or 1.4 billion for 2014-15, and 2,196 million for 13-15, 2.1 billion for improved conditions of service. This, in fact, implies that because of the salary increases that level 1 to 12 received, we had to obtain additional funding for the carry-through effect of salary increases for level 1 to 12, as it was signed in the Public Service Bargaining Council, the Central Bargaining Council. An amount of 72.5 million was allocated for security requirements in January, the coming January, requirements associated with the 2014 African Nations Championship, which will also be held by South Africa in this regard. So in essence, these are the three big things. The spotting is the event, firstly. Secondly, is for the salary increases and the carry-through costs as negotiated with organized labor, and then also in terms of the portion of the CJS, which is a huge amount that was budgeted towards a justice environment in order to address also their needs in terms of the whole pipeline effect. Then we say the expenditure increase from 47.6 billion in 2019 to 63.4 billion in 2012-13 at an average annual rate of 10%, we've already referred to it, and we say mainly driven by increased expenditure in compensation of employees to provide for additional capacity and improved conditions of service over the years. And as well, remember, we added significant numbers to the police stock establishment, but in addition also salary increases. Over the medium term, expenditure is expected to grow to 45.8 billion at an average annual rate of 6.2, and the growth is primarily due to investment in capital infrastructure and technological enhancements, especially in the forensic science and investigative functions, additional capacity for the DPCI, upgrading of the IT network, and the review and modernization of the criminal justice system to create an integrated justice environment. Then also the compensation of employees to increase from 50.4 billion in 1340 from 46.8 billion in 2012-13 at the rate of 7.7%, and it relates to a number of aspects, including the carry-through cost. The increase mainly to provide for the carry-through effect, as was indicated in the last bullet of the specific slide. If we then look at the main program, the next slide, one would immediately see that in program 1, there's administration, 8.9% to the next year, and then 5.6 and 5.2. The reason, to a large extent, are in your capital works, your building environment, where there are increases regarding some aspects. Then also visible policing, 6.9% from 31 billion to 33.5 billion, the biggest program in the world. And then also detective services from 14.3 billion to 13.1 billion, 5.9% increases, panning out 5.4 and 5.3, crime intelligence in the vicinity of 4.8, 5.7 and 5.7, the biggest driver there to a large extent on personnel, and the protection and security services 1.8 to 1.9, giving you an 8.8% increase, going to 2 billion and 2.197 billion. In Eston Zabel, if you look at the total of the vote, 7.1% increase, which is the most important year from 12-13 to 13-14, because you will, Parliament, when a, if approving this budget, will appropriate the 13-14 amount, will the 14-15 and 15-16 amount ultimately under planning figure in this regard. When we come to the specific program, the specific program will be broken into sub-programs and there are also elements in this regard. If we use a different classification system, we look at the goods and services, the broad category of your economic classification or your standard charge account, as is sometimes indicated in the ordinary language, we look at the three broad categories which are current payments, transfers, subsidies, payment of capital assets and so forth. Let's look at the current payments, compensation of employees, members of the committee, going from 46 to 50.4 billion is a 7.7% increase, and then from goods and services, 13.1% to 13.1 million to 15.8 billion, which is a 5.6% increase, and then we look at our ordinary transfers and subsidies, 493 million to 551 million, it's 11.7% increase, payment for capital assets, which are the two most important aspects are the building and the fixed structure, which are your whole capital building environment, and then also your machinery and equipment, of which the largest part, approximately 1.2 billion, are for vehicles. Remember, we try to maintain our losses, replace all our losses in vehicles, and even in some instances grow, because we have taken the fleet to, I think, quite a modernized status in recent times. In that regard, and I think the growth is explicitly visible also if you go back to our previous annual reports where it has been reflected. This, in essence, are your compensation. Your compensation of employees includes it's approximately just over 70% of the total budget, and it's basically the salaries and the contribution to pension funds and medical benefits. And your goods and services are your operational expenses, such as fuel, oil, and so forth, in this regard. Obviously, holdings and machinery equipment are quite self-explanatory of nature. Just an indication, a very high-level indication of the compensation environment. This 50.4 billion, if I go back to the previous one, relates to that compensation, that 50.4 billion under 2013-14, and it gives an indication of wage bill, the salary, the pension, bonus, cost of living, enlistment, and the allowances environment, the overtime environment, rental and housing allowances are already nearly 2 billion, also emanating from public service bargaining council negotiations in the recent, well, let's say the past 4 years, your medical schemes in the vicinity of 5.86 billion, and then your scarce fuels and promotions currently running at 260 million, which brings the total up to 50.416 billion in this regard. This is a very important aspect, and we monitor it very closely, because it is such a big part of the police budget. Now we get at the end of the refer to the process, and it's very important so that members can basically just, together with us, see where we are at this point in time. At any given financial year, we're busy with three financial years. The one that has just passed, the one that we're in, and the one that's coming. Or actually, the three that's coming. If we look at these, and it's such a busy thing, if members will allow me from the left-hand side on the big screen, you have a financial year end. It's basically where we are in March. Then, or even the previous financial year, they normally go into a cabinet lechotla, which took place. And during the cabinet lechotla, which takes place every year, you also have your plan phase, where you have your medium-term expenditure committees and your MTF inputs. Then you get your medium-term expenditure committee recommendations and also your ministers' committee on the budget. From there on, you will have your medium-term budget policy statement, which members know better than we do when it's being tabled in Parliament. From there, you go to your special joint committee on the budget or your standing committee on appropriations these days. receive allocation where you prepare your estimate of national expenditure after you provide the input there. And then you have your E&E edited by the National Treasury, where after you have the State of the Nation address of the President, you have your budget day thereafter, where the Minister of Finance is making his budget speech, and then also submitting the Red Book as an annex to the Appropriation Act. And then you have your budget vote deliberation, the one that we're currently busy with, and then eventually, and then also simultaneously, you have your internal apportioning, where we will then also, in the pooling to our various centers of responsibility of cost centers, provinces, divisions, whatever, say, here are your allocations, your operational allocations in this regard, and then also your parliament approval, should parliament approve it, vote on it, both houses, and then you have your spending taking place from 1 April to then, and then you have your entry reporting and legislative oversight. This year we had some, if I can just go back, we had some, during that place, there's a lot of interaction taking place. Firstly, internally, for instance, on the 25th to the 23rd of July, we had interaction with our cost center. We then said to them, what do you think should be spending priorities? Also, in terms of the 25th until the 26th of July, we had it also at the National Management Forum. That's where you generate your ideas and your proposals and whatever, which we then utilize there. Then you will start building your budget, so to speak, and the Treasury will have a number of input and also introduce specific aspects regarding either efficiency gains, additional funds, or even budget cuts, which we did not receive, so to speak, this year. And then eventually you will have again your internal apportioning, where you then say, this is what we got, we now give it to the Centers of Financial Responsibility, and we are now basically there, where we will again request input before we give final approval, and then the expenditure in terms of those will take place. This is basically in essence a 3-year scenario which one will find in terms of the whole planning in accordance with initially National Treasury, MTF and E&E guidelines, members of the committee, and then eventually also the departmental aspect. In this regard, and obviously here, we have our entry reporting, and you call it back and say, remember a year ago you promised us this, what now have you done, and what have you achieved, and have you used your money in the corners, that you put your money where your mouth is, and then we come back to you, and we have the legislative oversight. And these performance indicators that we are going to show to you within the next few minutes or hours, you will then be inquisitive about and say, you said to us you're going to do this, and this is a performance indicator that you indeed do it. And why didn't you do it if you didn't achieve it? Or if you achieved it, could it have been higher? Or you might find it in order. So this in essence is a very high level overview of the model of how it is constructed in this regard. Then we say we have these, we are now in the internal apportioning process, because you also refer to the internal flavor in this regard. And this exists as divisions and as provinces and whatever. The current operational budget, excluding certain aspects, is an vicinity of nearly 6.87 billion, which are the operational budgets that are going to your provinces, excluding certain aspects. So when we say the organizational component in the department entrusted with the task of compiling an operational estimate, receiving an allocation, and accounting for expenditure against such allocation, that is a center of responsibility, but remember we're a single department, so those are internal arrangements for us because we are so big. If we were a one building, 200 people department of X, which are very small departments, it's not necessary to go and subdivide into call centers because you can do everything from one office or centrally because you don't really have that in to a large extent. Now, a very important aspect in the internal apportioning or any apportioning that we have is that what we say is that personnel is the primary cost driver in this, nearly 73-74%, and also drives direct operational expenditures, as if you have people, they generate operational costs. Compensation expenditures therefore annually determined from there. We start every year from there, how many people, for what, for this allowance, for that allowance, and we do it from there. First category, taking into account existing personnel and new personnel where appropriate, where after they are apportioned between the programs as well. Then the personnel are allocated to provinces and other organizational components according to the resource allocation guide. Let's say we actually are the position this year. We are going to have to appoint 5,000 personnel to replace those that we are going to lose if we want to stay exactly where we are. That is the objective this year. Then those 5,000 will have to be distributed by means of a model which we call the resource allocation guide. Then all of these functions are receiving personnel according to the RAG in terms of the replacement, because current financial year we are not going to grow the state. It's a holding budget. The operational expenditures, not the personnel expenditures, are predominantly goods and services and machinery and equipment in order to perform the services. Apportioning is performed according to priority, specific allocations by the Treasury, because members of Parliament, you sometimes vote money for us into earmark. Then we have to pay with it. We have to use it for a specific purpose. If we don't use it for that purpose, we become an offerer. So we must use it in accordance with your wishes or the Treasury's wishes in this regard. And also, the specific allocations for, we can't move, for instance, out of capital. We can only move into capital. You can't move into personnel expenditure or compensation. You can only move out of compensation expenditure. Apportioning is formed according to priority specific allocations by the Treasury, input received from centers, divisions, provinces, baseline analysis and personnel level as the main drivers of operational funds. So there's a number of aspects which we use in order to derive eventually at the model. And may I just say that you always have more needs than you have funds. That is a basic point of departure. The allocation framework provided centers to apportion further and cascade to stations as well. Budget approach is not to apply the budget too rigidly, because then you bind your managers to such an extent that they can't actually move, thereby decreasing the utilization of unique opportunities, for instance, underspending and using the funds for something else as they arise, nor to apply the budget too leniently, thereby reducing the authority of the budgetary system as a control system. May I just say, and then you've also requested some of the aspects which are challenging specifically in the provincial environment, and we have here provincial commissioners who can elaborate on this much more than I can do. But I'm going to refer to this. And during the questions and answers, they can elaborate as they wish. These are not the only ones, but these are main ones. Price fluctuations increases on fuel. That 81 cents per liter. Or let me put it like this. We use approximately 200 million liters of fuel gas. If it increases with 1 rand, it's 200 million rand more. The 81 cent increase gives us a budget, an additional requirement of 158 million. 81 cents, one half, if it is for the full 12 months. What we're saying is, the increase, the fluctuations in price, especially on fuel and oil, has a major impact because you've got a big fleet. Try to provide that, therefore, but sometimes it's more difficult, dependent upon the recovery by the Department of Energy and also the dollar price per barrel of crude oil. So it plays an important role in our environment, because that big fleet using an enormous amount of fuel. Then also intensified service delivery process, which to a certain extent we never had really in the past decade to such an extent as we have had now for the past couple of recent times, to put it like that. Intensified service delivery process and unrest situations, because we have deployed personnel. Suddenly General Manuel says, I need some intensified level if you want me to deploy more personnel in order to address certain aspects, which is actually quite logical. Then some big events arranged by external entities, some unforeseen. If you take up now that we're going to have a big walk-up over 2 years, we can really plan to that extent. Sometimes it does not happen. And then we sit with a big event that comes suddenly and we need additional personnel. Additional funds for overtime and S&T. Although we will still come to you and the figures must still be audited. For instance, for Amazon, it's far in excess of 100 million. Just to deploy the first personnel in order to arrive at AFCON, but obviously those questions will come when you do legislative oversight over the 12-13, the current financial year. The fact of the matter is, for some we need additional funds. elections, very important. WACAT, WSSD, all of those, BRICS, those have big deployment numbers mean SST and overtime. So some big events are sometimes impeding on our budget. Secondary external unplanned occurrences. There may be various external unplanned occurrences which must certainly be addressed. And the moment it happens, it requires that those DCs sitting there must deploy people, they must make a plan and they need resources. The moment General Pietros moved one person from Edenvale across town to Magaliesberg or Morocco, wherever, that person is going to need S&D. It affects their budget. So something event arranged by external entities. Obviously, if we arrange it, we know about it. Secondly, external unplanned occurrences. There are so many that happen, which a province must then eventually pick up. And they can allude to this. This results usually in pressures like relating to overtime, subsistence, allowance, travel, and fuel. Let's, for instance, say you suddenly have to deploy 2,000 people in the Midland of KZN for some specific reason, like unrest. They have to stay someplace. Especially you have accommodation aspects. You have to move sometimes some of it from other places in KZN or even from another province. You have overtime, you have the S&C scenario. And then also, what we also have which are impacting, and I think we've been struggling with this for some time, and this actually is not a budget treasury, it's more an under-expenditure, or the risk of under-expenditure, are the delivery arrangements in respect of the building of these facilities where we are engaged in the DDW model. So this is, and then we say FZCA, and obviously the PCs can allude to others, but I have tested this with some of the PCs, and they go along with these as well. So it was not just a budgetary aspect, this is also supported by the PCs. Then we get to program one. I don't know how you want to say, how you want me to do it. Maybe do program one, to pause, or what do you want?
At this stage, Chair, if we could just to pause and engage on the key issues and move on. For me, really, I just want to emphasize the following. The split is important in terms of our budget. You would see there's a target that we're talking about. We would like not to move into a space where more and more is consumed just by people and we take away resources for the tools for trade. It's very important for us to maintain that split. That we're currently sitting close to what, 70, 73, 72? Yeah, so I think a cardinal point for us, if we exceed that 73 to a 75, I think 75 is a hard point for us, we do anything, we must work within that process below there. That which is very, very important because it's critical. But we acknowledge the fact that policy is a human resource intensive environment because the product and the service that we deliver lies on the people. The second issue that I think we will debate and discuss internally is around, I heard General Getty talking about our in-business not having much. I think we're going to have more. We just look at where we are sitting in terms of perceptions of society, of police. It's an area that we need to start allocating, good spending on, including our communication and PR. We have been weak in terms of doing that, and the drive right now is for us to think about it and look at how we deal with it. The other thing that we are doing in order to enrich this process and the process of allocation, we are looking at participative processes, we are looking at the re-establishing the finance committee so that we can be informed and make sure that there is no overlooking of some of the areas that we are having. I do want to accentuate one of the issues that is raised around core business direction, where we are having to spend more and more resources around protest. And it's no longer just protest. It may help. It may be maybe good information just to share that in the past 18 years, when I looked at statistics that we were given, We've dealt with over 150,000 protests. The past 3 years is about 33,000. But most of them were peaceful, about 30,000 were peaceful. About 3,000 in the past 3 years were those that moved, that said, were violent. But we're starting to see new dimensions in terms of intensity, requiring more from us. You know, some of the unprecedented things that we've seen in Marikana are starting to say to us, we may be requiring different resourcing and different aspects to that. So I just want to raise those. And then the cost drivers have been clearly articulated there. But also there are issues relating to new legislative requirements. Because new legislation comes, and what we haven't done on a regular basis to, you know, or as a mode of practice to say, when a new act comes, what are the cost implications for some? Because it may be that the demands are just so wide. Can we start talking about minimum capacity to deliver at least so that we can cost it? Because some of the cost implications are really taking us somehow out of our limited cost budget. So I think with those, we just want to say that's the plan. I don't know if you have questions from the committee, then we can go into specific details.
Thank you, Chairperson. We're now getting to a scenario where we look at each program specifically to the funds as included in the Red Book, but also broken down into elements, but more than you will find into the Red Book. So it gives you a better perception of what's included under the sub-program. And then also we will look at the performance indicators, which are very important because we will be held accountable by superiors like yourselves in order to say, as I said, during the state of oversight, that you indeed do what you promised us a year ago. Be that as it may, let's look at the expenditure estimate per program in this regard. If you look at the first program, administration, one will immediately see that you have sub-programs there. And to a large extent, the kind of sub-programs are similar, not the same, but similar across government. You have your ministry, you have your management, you have your corporate services, and you have your office accommodation, totaling 15.9 billion. Now, we've referred it to a purpose, and then also we say, the management, the 103 million, includes the provision for the civilian secretariat of police. Remember, the civilian secretariat for police will next year become a designated department, so they will go out, we will give them the money that's due to them, and it will be transferred to a new, probably a vote, but I think they will take it out of the National Treasury because they will be totally independent then from us. Then also, corporate services consist inter alia, that is at 12.9 billion of human resource development, that's the new name for the old training, of 1.8 billion. So we try to push a lot of money into the training scenario as well. Technology management services, 2.7 billion. Supply chain management, which includes all the stores, clothing, ammunition, not issued, weapons, buildings, capital works, and so forth, of which 1.036 billion is for capital works. Then also personnel management, 1 billion for all the personnel people around country. Human resource utilization, 200 million. Financial services, 600 million. And corporate support, 700 million, which is a mixed bag of various functions. The significant funding levels under this program relates to the CJS revamp initiative. 0.9 billion for IT. That's 900 million for IT. Oh, sorry, it doesn't vest here. We have shifted it. Vesting under program 3, but the IT people are obviously managing it because it's IT related. Vesting under program 3, detective services. The IJS project, 312 million. And the hosting and network infrastructure upgrade, this is vesting here, within the TMS environment. Office accommodation, 3.03 billion for rates, taxes, leases, and municipal services within the office accommodation sub-program. That's that 2.8 billion that you are seeing which becomes 3.035 million. I think it has been cut off there. So this is in essence, it's an environment where you have a lot of resources supporting operational environments, especially IT-related, and then also building-related. Then, I'm going to ask my colleague, Jerome Ndziwa, to basically just refer and discuss the purpose, strategic objectives, and then also the performance indicators of Program 1.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. I'll walk through the reason why we need the first to justify the need. One thing I'll say then is today, we are planning according to the federal framework that governs the planning for strategic planning and annual performance planning. And some of the key elements that are highlighted in there are that we have to ensure that each and every program and sub-program, as outlined by the National Commissioner when referred to that thing on the work breakdown of organizations from Program 1 to Program 5, that we are expected at least to measure each and every one of those programs and sub-programs to justify why the allocation of budget should be there. Now, what I'm going to present then in all the four, five programs, those elements of measure which justify the need for us to allocate the funds. And most of these targets are rolled up to a national level because also some of them are sitting in the operational plans of the various divisions and provinces, and they are all measured in those areas. Then quickly, in terms of program one itself, the purpose-based developed policy management department, and that includes also providing some administrative support. And the objective that we aim to achieve there is the regulation of overall management of the department and to ensure the provision of a generalized type of service. The elements that sit in that area in Program 1 relate to ministry, management corporate services, and of the accommodation. Then moving into the actual performance indicators that and targets that run the first program, you'll notice that most of them are continuous. They're continuing from the previous financial years. But as the implementer indicated in the opening address, there are certain performance indicators that we have included into the plan, in part to address the qualitative element of how we are performing as an organization. I will allude to those. And then the first one, therefore, has to do with the issue of the maintenance of a minimum workforce in the organization. As you will see, day in level 12, we had at least 199,355 that were reported in terms of the previous establishment. And then the next indicator that has to do with, as the National Commission indicated, the need for us to ensure quality training. They were talking about this new indicator that John talked about, passenger planners to get competent for training in terms of the training plan that we have for training in the organization. Our target for this financial year are 92% competent. And then in relation to that, it's also about the learners that have been declared competent. Upon completing, there's a certain percentage, 1% declared by the there's 1%, yes, that is devoted to us to in terms of discretionary grants, which we should utilize to do some to continue training in the organization. There we are saying we intend then to ensure that 80% of learners that have undergone training in terms of learnership, assistantship, and other related training in line with the skills plan of the SASITA, at least we have to have 80% learners to get competent. And then because actually, as one of the means of addressing the issue of the verification element, the element of the whole need of us to train our members in terms of tracking the K53, we have included that indicator to show that at least 2012, 2013, 2014, who must have at least 90% of those learners declared competent in driving. And then the need now to advance over the individual skills and other policing-related qualifications. In terms of qualifications, we've got a percentage target there that we have. We want to have a 70-30 split of batteries that we offer to our members, 70% going to the batteries that relate to policing, and then the other 30% relating to addressing elements of skills. And you can see particularly we're talking to the issue of forensic sciences and other expertises within the supply chain environment and the rest. And then there's a need in terms of government policies that we should address the issue of internships in a department. So at least we want to increase by 10% from what we currently have. In 2011-12, we reported 235 internships, and I want to increase by 10% every financial year to contribute towards the issue of skilling and improving the element of having people being getting employed in government and beyond. And then the next one has to do with the ratio of personnel to vehicles, which we want to maintain over the years into the outer years. And then comes the issue of police facilities. In terms of the capital works, leases and maintenances, we want to ensure that in every given financial year, in line with the milestones that have been set, we must complete 100% of each of the milestones that have been planned in the financial year. As in the annual plan, the printed version, at the back, it shows the kind of milestones that we're talking to ensure that whatever we say we're going to do in the financial year in construction environment, we will achieve 100%. And then the next one has to do with us having to maintain the devolved facility projects. They were measuring mainly two elements, finishing something and the expenditure had to be utilized fully. But we're sitting there at 100%. We intend to get 100%. And then the next one has to do with what the minister was referring to today. In order for us not to duplicate the amount of money that was budgeted for a specific project, a construction project, we have to, at least in terms of accepted standards, go up to a level of 20% variance away from the initially budgeted amount to avoid a dual issue of saying we had planned to finish a police station or within 50 million, and then by the time we complete that police station, years down the line or so, we have almost doubled the amount. This is what we are wanting to measure. It's one of those quality measures that we were referring to at the beginning. As the Chief Financial Officer has indicated in the next indicator, we are sitting now at 24-26 ratio in terms of compensation as operations. And we have also, Chairperson, the next two indicators. In order for us to ensure that we account accordingly, we have split the two. The one to do with the accredited justice systems plan, and the other one below it has to do, I can see the personal fees in there. The second one has to do with us to address the issue of the criminal justice system review. Now, for those who are saying, for each and every solution we're providing from the IT plan, we must at least do 95% in 2013, and that we want to continue maintaining over the years. I think I will deposit that for the that program, Chairperson. Thank you.
Now we get to program two, visible pollution, and we look at the expenditure estimate. If we look at program two, which is our biggest program, and we look at a visible pollution environment, one will immediately see it consists of three sub-programs. Crime prevention, significant 25 billion going up to 27 billion. Water security,
1.4 to 1.5 billion. Specialized interventions, 2.3 to 2.6 billion. Now, one will immediately see that it's the biggest portion, it's a 46% weight that this program carries within the growth bullies. Now, crime prevention include crime prevention, the LM crime prevention of 24.1 billion, road police of 700 million or 0.7 billion, K9 units of 0.6 billion or 600 million, mounted police 90 million or 0.09 billion, youth children and gender-based violence 400 million or 0.04 billion, the flying squad 0.9 billion, and then also detained prisoners, what we have to spend on their food, their nutrition, as well as their medical of 200 million. Those are big cost drivers within the first sub-program, crime prevention. A very important aspect is also intensifying attention to the firearms, liquor, and second-hand goods control pre-trip, as was indicated also in the beginning, in the objectives and priorities. We also have the invisit, my apologies for this typing error, spelling mistake there, to mobilize communities, and then also specialized interventions include special task force, 60 million, national intervention unit, and then the 0.1, 100 million for tactical, for the national intervention unit, and then the tactical response teams of 200 million or 0.02 million. Those are basically the elements which make up crime prevention, and then border security, and then specialized intervention. And obviously, the broad intention here is to provide those basic policing services. The last bullet refers to what I've also referred to or alluded to earlier, is the enhancement of the basic resource requirements for the Special Task Force and National Intervention Unit, which use specific personal equipment which are quite expensive and costly of nature. The three-year program we refer to, so that we get in a very, very high degree of preparedness in this regard. This, in essence, is the breakdown of Program 2 into its sub-programs and also further into its elements, which, in order to give members an indication of what this program consists of and the amount and baselines that are incorporated into this environment. Thank you.
The people then of this program, to any local stations, to institute and treat as safety and security, and also provide specialized intervention in terms of group treatment programs, crime prevention, border security, and specialized intervention, and to discourage all crime by providing a proactive and responsive policing service that will reduce the levels of crime. But in attempting to achieve the target, I'll walk through individual sub-programs, the first one being crime prevention. There we talk about the reduction in the number of straight-up crime, contact crime, and serious crime. And then in terms of the first one, we're talking about the continuous reduction by 2% from the baseline. And then the second one talks to contact crime, which has to do with the reduction with a range of 4 to 7%. And then the next one, the serious crime, has to do with a reduction by 4 to 7%. It should also be noted that the third one on serious crime, it doesn't have to be measured going forward. Why? Because it is considered in one of the, in the two categories already indicated above. So it will have to be discontinued in terms of the measurement, because already we are accounting for it in terms of the first two. And still within the same sub-program, useful policing, we are measuring the reduction in the number of student firearms, vehicles, and we are talking about the recovery of a minimum 84% on the firearms and a minimum of 46% on the vehicles. It's also indicated also in the state of the nation address, this is one of the areas which we are emphasizing further. And then the third one has to do with the issue of the percentage of persons who have escaped from police custody. We've benchmarked on this indicator, and we are indicating it today. We are now wanting to say the number of people incarcerated in our holding facilities, we must not exceed 0.50% of SKs. It should be below. And then the year after, then it should be 0.48, and the year after would be 0.46. And then the next one has to do with the issue of applications for firearm licenses. We're saying in financial year, we must at least have completed 90% of applications to ensure that we do not have backlog as we had initially experienced in the past. And then the next indicator has to do with us reacting to Alpha, Bravo, and Charlie complaints. And there, the production, I mean the actual reaction time, we have 19.05 for the Alpha complaint, which we want to maintain over the year. And then we've got 24.33 minutes response time, which we intend to maintain. And on the Bravo one, and then on the Charlie, we have also 21.45 minutes, which we want to actually utilize to react to those calls. Now, one of the issues that should be noted is that we also, as we go forward, want to now do a spread of the kind of responses and times or minutes taken to respond to those, which will also be talking to the terrain and the other geographical dynamics that are involved both in the urban rural mix and the rural mix. And then the next one has to do, what National Commissioner referred to, the movement towards ensuring that the African-friendly support centers in all police stations, because we're currently sitting at 86%. And then the next one has to do with the recovery of drugs, liquor, and we're also continuously increasing the 3% on both areas. The next one, which is our new indicator now, has to do with, it was indicated earlier also by the Deputy Minister, we wanted to ensure that effective policing is implemented in all police stations, and we are utilizing certain minimum criteria that we are going to measure each police station to ensure that if it meets those criteria, then it certifies us that effective policing is established and will be operating. And the next sub-program is to do with securing our borders and ports of entry. There we've got two elements. The one has to do with us having to react to hits that relate to the persons, wanted persons, and the other one has to do with reacting to hits that relate to vehicles, wanted vehicles and all. And I want to maintain the 100% reaction to those hits over the year. The next one, which is the specialized intervention. There we've got the National Investigation Unit, Special Task Force, Public Order, and also the whole element of transporting and delivery of available or digital cargo. In all of those, there is no compromise. We want to maintain 100% quality in the business that we conduct in those areas. And the next slide is about program three, which then I'll hand over back to my colleague to talk to the financial elements of it.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. If we now go to program three and we look at the funding thereof, of the program as well as the sub-program and the elements underneath, it will look as follows. Firstly, there are four sub-programs underneath this program. The one, crime investigations. And sorry, General Johnson, I know you don't like it. General Texas in the old language. And then all the criminal record centra. And then also forensic science laboratories. And then also the specialized investigations. In this regard, the specialized investigations are basically the DPCI, or in the normal language walks. So if you look at the crime investigations, going from 8.5 billion to 9.4 billion, close to one billion, it's a 10% increase. We're trying to keep their funding on a very credible basis and for various reasons. Then if we go to criminal record center, you see it go from 1.6 to 1.8. This big CJS revamp in that environment, Bullet 2 reflects it as well. CJS revamp initiatives, operational portion, will strongly promote further capacity enhancement at forensics. 251 million as well as the criminal record center. There is a bit of a decrease of forensics, but that is because of the CJS, which are a significant portion, and the 300 million that was taken to justice, but we can be rest assured that it's still a very credible baseline in this regard. Then also, we say that specialized investigations, especially in 1230, received significant additional funding, if I'm not mistaken, was in the vicinity of 100 million. So the 1213 figure is great, and from there on you've got normal growth. So specialized investigations in this regard did receive additional funding, especially in the previous financial year with the federal baseline. And then also a very important aspect which we refer to here, but which are not vested here, which are actually vested under Program 1, but to say to members that members must remember training of detectives will remain a very important aspect, and that is what we say, the detective receives specific training focus as seen under Program 1. And then we've already alluded to the tracking of the stock set units, which we have done and which we will go on further, especially in the investigative environment, but not to say not, and then also adding some of the rollout in terms of further pilots in terms of the prevention environment. And we say then also to maintain and expand tracking capacity for wanted persons and further resourcing the family violence, child protection and sexual offences unit, which we will definitely resource to such an extent that we feel very comfortable with that scenario. That is in terms of the program free environment investigator for detection.
And Chairperson, that repeating the purpose, because the CFO is already alluded to it. The main strategic objective here is what the Minister of Concern referred to as our contribution to the entire value chain of the criminal justice. Therefore, we want to, in that fashion, we want to contribute to the successful prosecution of crime by investigating, gathering and analyzing evidence, thereby increasing the detection rate of priority crimes. In terms of those four sub-programs, the first one is crime investigation. They were measuring, three key areas. The one has to do with the detection. The second one has to do with the trial readiness, which is a quality element. And the third one has to do with the collective outcome, which is conviction rate. And then the division has to do with the serious crime, and second element being the contact time. And we are just mentioning the increases, as you see on the block on which was 14. On the detection rate for serious crime, we've got 1.5 to reduction down to, increase to 56.5 in 2014. And the one the trial rate is for the same. We want to increase by 15%. And then on the conditions, they want to increase by 0.3%. And this should also be noted that on the condition element, there are also other players in the criminal system that are assist, because we may have done our investigation, but issues that get into prosecution also have come into the picture, and issues of the magistrate and the court, how they manage also the impact on the condition rate. And then the next lot then is the contact crime. Detection rate, they want to increase by 1.5, and the child rate has to increase by 15%, and then the conviction rate has to be increased by 3.9%. And then the detection rate for trio crime, want to increase by 6%, and the child rate is by 15%, the conviction thereof by 0.5%. And the next lot is the crime that implements 18 years and above. And they want to increase the detection rate by 75%. Maintaining to keep it at 75%. As you see, our estimate for previously was 72%. We want to go up to 75% against the initial baseline. And then the trial ready have to increase by 15% to 54.85. And then the conviction rates on the same will have to increase by 6.8% so that we can reach 80.31%. That was now for those above the 18 years. For those below 18 years, the detection rate has to go up to 70, has to be at 72%, because the baseline was below, it was around 69 and more. We want to get it at 72% and keep it throughout the year. And then the environment is nice, then twice we have that kind of an arrangement. And then percentage for travel ready case, so that has to be increased by 30%. And then the confusion rate has to increase by 9.5%. And the next sub-program, which is the specialized investigations, the measurements, they talk about the child rape case, okay? On fraud and corruption, as the National Chair indicated in the opening address, the cases cluster is decided to measure of itself on issues of crime relating to corruption. And besides just having to also deal with the crime national to the cluster. So in terms of the cluster, that is not looking, we want to at least have the travel cases sitting at 40% in the current in the financial level of planning form. And then the detection rate for serious commercial crime must increase by 2% from the baseline, and then the percentage of travel ready case objects for the same must be increased by 2% to achieve 82%. And then registered serious organized crime, we want to have projects that are registered there that are successfully dealt with at 60% for 2014. And then the next has to do with commercial crime-related trial cases where now officials are involved. The person is just talking to chief of cluster, now this one is talking to others also. They will want to say we have to have 25 trial-related cases. Because when you say charity, as I indicated earlier on, this has to do with the quality elements put into the effort of the organization to ensure that the court processes are run smoothly. So we want to get 25% of those cases which are ready for court, and then the year after 26, and then the outer years will be about 25. The next one has to do with the amount that's associated with these issues. We, in terms of the delivery agreement, we have that amount stipulated for us. So we want to achieve at least more than, to deal with cases that have more than 5 million in assets. That is the value. So in every year we want to go maintain the what we call the 5 million in terms of that performance indicator that is the argument of the chief field platform. And then the next sub-program had to do with our processing side to ensure that we deliver on our detection. Now there we've got the report that should be generated on original previous conditions. This funny way, the previous in the other year we did this year and the outside want to maintain that 9% original previous conditions, which are generated. You notice that we are reducing the number of days then. We used to sit on 20, now we're coming down to 15 calendar days, so that we assist in the court processes urgently. So, and we'll see children if I can relate to it. Back in the day we had about 30 days, and then we moved back to 20, now we're sitting on 15. We were trying to fast-track the processes. And then the next one is about the laboratory itself. There we are talking about the actual now processing of the entities. Although we want to also continue doing it within the 28 working days, we are increasing now the cases exhibits that we're processing. In 2013, it would be 93%, and the year after 94%, and the year after that would be at 95%. Chairman, and I will put that then to allow my colleagues to go for a tour on the project.
Thank you, sir. If we now go to crime intelligence expenditure figures, one will immediately see that it consists of two sub-programs, crime intelligence operations, and then also intelligence and information monitoring. The crime intelligence environment, to a large extent, consists of a personnel-intensive element. It's very high on personnel. Obviously, there's also equipment applicable, but in this program, as we indicated here, it's very high on personnel content. The operational expenditures are associated with fuel and oil, travel and subsistence, obviously, and then also, as it indicated, trying to also upgrade our vetting capacity and capabilities, and a number of posts to be filled in this regard. It's a program that goes up from 2.590 billion to 2.715 billion, and because it is so strongly personnel related, the biggest expenditure portion, above 80%, are in the vicinity of compensation. Compensation in terms of the carry through the salary increases, as I have alluded to at the beginning, very much applicable here, and then also the appointment of those leading personnel in order to strengthen the capacity in this regard. I think that is appropriate to indicate this to the committee and not to say too much in this regard. Thank you.
Just again repeating the purpose of the program. The one that can immediately say is that when you look at those strategic objectives, they are directly derived from the National Strategic Intelligence Act, which lists the three objectives that pertain to the environment health: gathering, correlating, coordinating, and analyzing intelligence, and the second one being institutional counterintelligence measures, and the third one applying calm intelligence relating to the national strategic intelligence to the national intelligence coordination committee. They are seen as such in terms of the actual legislation. Now, the two key programs, sub-programs, they really are crime intelligence operations and intelligence information management. Something I can say also, ahead of even talking to the indicators here, that we were actually requested by the Buffalo Committee on Police to say it doesn't look like this environment is, we were indicating how we're measuring it, given the amount of money that is sitting in the environmental share that is also alluded to. Now, you'll notice that then there are certain areas where we have the element of classified, because that is where now we're talking to other agents, actually organs, which have to measure the performance of the environment. Now, just to put the members through the indicators that are sitting in the environment. One is with the number of networks, operations that are conducted. They were intending to go up to 29,552. And then the other area that is being measured, which is accounted for elsewhere, has to do the number of corporate intelligence projects conducted to address privacy crime. And the next one is to do with the percentage of identified or enforced intelligence operations neutralized. The next one is to do with the percentage of security threat assessments conducted. The next one is to do with the percentage of information security breaches. And the next one, we have to do with the number of intelligence projects that have been generated, which are assisting in address of privacy crime towards proper conviction. They were saying in this financial year that we are planning for 258,606. And the next one has to do with the quarterly intelligence report that are required to be generated per annum. So we have the four quarterly reports that have to be generated in each and every year. And then the next one has to do with the that also legislative requirement of the percentage of strategic intelligence report that should be generated and submitted to NICOC, which is also an area which is being measured at the same environment.
Thank you, sir. If we now go to the last program, 5, protection services, protection and security services, it is important to note that this is a program consisting of 4 sub-programs: VIP protection services, static and mobile security, government security regulator, operational support. This is an environment we obviously need significant operational support because they provide all these services to important persons as well as venues across the country. The relative growth in this program is essentially due to the carry-through effect of the compensation element, the cost of living increases in the previous financial year.
the strengthening of capacity required due to increased demand for protection services, and I think we can all honestly say that there is an increase in demand. And then the increased payment for capital assets included in this environment has to allow for significant upgrading of the vehicle fleet of VIP protection services. It is a fleet that is doing a lot of work, that is running for most of the day, and obviously one also has to maintain it in a significant fashion. So that in essence is the composition of protection and security services, and obviously can be expected much more adequately by the relevant divisional commissioner in this regard.
The three sub-programs, key sub-programs that are sitting in that environment, VIP protection, safety and mobile security, and the government security regulator, intend to address the objective that has to do with minimizing security violations through the protection of foreign and local prominent people and securing strategic areas of interest of the country. The performance indicators and targets that relate to those sub-programs are the percentage of security provided in relation to the security breaches, where we have a little awareness on that, is 100% protection that should be provided at all times. And the second one is to do with the basic security, where we also are sitting at 100% protection. The next one, which is talking to the national key points and other strategic installations, in the financial year, we have to, and in the subsequent years, we have to have an audit conducted on 50% strategic installations. And the next one has to do with the actual evaluation of the national key points. We are saying that all national key points must be evaluated, which is should sit at 100% every year. And then, Chairperson, the last part has to do with what is actually the appendix C of the annual performance plan as printed. It's just those five plans that are sitting there. The one has to do with the infrastructure and capital assets. And the second one has to do with the information and communication technology plan, human resource management plan, service management plan, and the service delivery improvement plan. I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As you can see, some members have already left, and they have indicated that they got some questions to raise. We will allow them when they come back to write them and submit them to your office so that you can respond in writing. In the meantime, I'll allow the members here to raise questions if they are.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Welcome, General Biafe and your team. Thanks for the strategic plan. I've got a few questions. I don't think it's a few. I've got a lot of questions. Number one is, when I look at page 3 of your the outcome 3, slide number 5. You talked about you want to reduce corruption within the country and within the JCPS cluster. If one looks to that, and the question comes to mind to the Auditor General's report, the 2012-2013 report, especially with the question in mind reducing corruption. According to the Auditor General report in 2013, there is something that it borrows my mind. The report found that the period 2008-2009 up to 2010 and 2011, the Department of Police spent $4 billion on consultants. $4 billion on consultants. 9 projects to the value of $569 million. Were audited. Some key findings from the report, and this is the question. There was a project to have a firearm control system for an amount to, and 2 million and all that. And then we find out that the head of the commission signed four addendum for 412 million. Then the department, the police, paid 341 million to the consultant. Look out, and you don't even have that system right now. How is that possible? 341 million for a firearm control system. My question to that is, how could it happen? What kind of a system is that? Because I can tell now, and thank God that the committee went to Germany and we have seen what is happening there. The system that they were using there doesn't even cost 100 million and it's so safe. Here, we spent 341 million and there is no system. That question I really need an answer. That's why I'm asking you, if you check your output, you want to reduce corruption within a country, I think you need to reduce corruption within the police first. It's a serious thing. And by saying that, police is a profession. Police is not a job that you can take lightly. It's a very, very important part of the government. If the police system is not working, there's chaos in the country. I don't think I'm one of the people that are proud of the police. That's why in my constituency I work for the brigadiers, I work with the policemen. Whatever there's a problem, I work with them. And if I look to this project, General Stoli knows me. He used to be from the Northern Cape. He has done an excellent job in Kimi over the years. Country revenge. An excellent job. I still have the frame that they've given to me about the youth crime prevention. I don't have it in my house. That's how I thought, that's how much I add value to the police, because these are the people that need to keep us safe in the house. Another question. Let me see that slide. Where's the page? I have that page down. Let me go to page 6 quickly. Slide 12. On slide 12, there is the intruding that the pace of building new police stations is accelerated. I think I was a deputy chair in the police forum in Upington, Pavalero. And I was a deputy chair for 4 years. And that was in 2000, I think in 2002 up until 2006. No, it was in 2000 up until 2003, yes. We fought for a police station in Pavalero. I don't know for how long. Up until today, we're still using the old clinic and they just put some stuff there, extra. And Pavalero got more than 20,000 people. My question to you is, what criteria are you using to build police stations? Then on page 13, what is that? Yeah. Slide 25. I would like to know, what is the split between the salaries and operations, seeing that you spent using about 70% of the budget for compensation? What is the split between operations and the salaries, and then, page 17, yeah, slide 33, yes, slide 33, that's a bullet point, the 1.036 billion for capital works, The one that you, yeah. Yeah, after this flight 33. My question is, why do you pay such a lot of money? Why don't you build your own building? Because police is a permanent structure. Why don't you work with public works and put the plan together with public works and build your own building? Why do you need to hire buildings? This is a permanent structure. There's no way that the police will ever exist in South Africa. There is no way. It exists in apartheid, now we've got democracy, it must even be better. Much better. Because our people are in control, it must be much, much better. If you spend money, taxpayers' money, and I say it, and my colleague knows it, I say it in the house, if you spend, even if you overspend R1 billion, but you give us the output, you show the vans, the buildings, it is in proper condition, it is running, it is doing service to our people. I don't even think the committee will have a problem to agree with you because it is money well spent. But you can't come and say you've overspent R1 billion or R300 million, but there's nothing. That's not value for money. Value for money is when you spend it for self-delivery for our people. And I agree with you. The environment that some of you are working in at these stations are not good. Are not sufficient, are not... It's at no point that you can say it's good. For instance, you go to police in my constituency, there are a lot of them, and I ask myself, we expect police to do a proper service, a proper job, and yet the environment where they are working in is no good. You find 2-3 policemen sitting in one office, the airport's not even working properly, it's hot. When you get in there, you can't have a private conversation with a police person asking them questions. It's not good. When you go to the cells where the police are supposed to sit in an office and check and you must go out, I don't think one of the generals will go and sit there. Because the smell in that closed by that office is no good. But we expect police people to be honest. My question is, please, if it's going to take you 5 to 10 years to start planning, building your own building so that you can have, stop renting and enriching people that doesn't need money. Other question is on a slide. I think we're going to need to check and I'm almost done. Slide 43. There's a point there, detained persons spend R200 million, etc., for food and medical and living conditions. I've just touched on that point. I would like to ask you guys, the police department, this question today. Are you happy with the food that you, and the medical treatment that you give the detained people? Are you happy? Let me make a comment. And it worked in many cases. If you treat a person of dignity, you can get more out of that person. Instead of making that person afraid of you, you'll get nothing out of that person. And I say this, I've seen it happen to my colleagues in apartheid. When they start to detain us, the minute they start hitting us, we refuse to talk. They refuse to talk. Some of them held a gun at our head, we refuse to talk. The treatment was not good. Today, it should have been better. If you take your child, if you speak to your child in a proper way, you can get more out of your child. And screaming at your child, shouting at your child, you get nothing out of the child. You make that child a stubborn child. That food and medical and living conditions, I think you need, really need to look properly into that. And the last question is again from the Auditor General's report. Now before I get to this one, there's something that I will insert the student to answer anything. It's a lot of questions. And but there's something that, as we have listened to the things that they want to do and all that, you still find that the escape police is at present with 50%. Why is that so high? Why does people escape so high? And so it comes to my mind now, ask you this question. The student police that you guys, student police, some of the discipline are no good. They don't treat people with respect and dignity that the people deserve of this country. If I was a man of an unforgiving heart, more than 100 police should have been fired by now, because I interact with them whenever I'm there on the weekend, and many of them have stopped them not to hit people. When they didn't know in a member of parliament, one day it was raining, they were stopping in front of the stop street. I was sitting behind them, they were in the entrance. Four of them. There were two women in them and two men. And I thought, no, these guys are waiting to move. They didn't move. They were putting on the other, they were standing there, and I thought, what's happening here? And then I get out of my car and ask them, guys, why are you standing in the road? You must move here. And that student asked me, not in terms of what I'm saying to you now, but who are you? But he was using other language. I went back into my car, I checked out my memo parliament ticket, and I took out my notebook, and I said to him, I want to name now, and I'm going to write, and I'm going to make a case against you. The woman in the car at the back recognizes me, and she starts asking forgiveness. Those are a few. Many of them, I've stopped even many of them running over Red Rover. I chased them, I stopped them. I said, you can't do this, you are a policeman. You must respect the law, you want people to respect you. So I'm saying, the police must act in a manner that the people can trust. You will only win the community's trust when you respect them. So why is the escape so high? And then, there's a question here that I'm kneeling to ask, why is expenditure on employee compensation very hard? Let me go to the Auditor General report and come to the professionalism of the police. I don't want to talk about Marikana. I think it's out of mind. I see the general is there. She can ask questions. That's not my way of dealing with things. Your supply chain. Are you happy with the way your supply chain management system are working? Because the Auditor General report has got a big opinion on that, how you handle your supply chain. The lack of the professionalism displayed to members of the public and even members of parliament by police officers and an oversight visits by the members of portfolio committees and select committees clearly indicates that there remain a major problem of professionalism. The question is, why has police changed to become so brutal in their actions? We've seen when you open the TV, you see what is happening. And I'm just asking myself the question. When we were fighting against apartheid regime, we said we will never treat our people like dogs. We will never treat our people as if they are no human beings. All the police are there. No. I know gentlemen in the police. Ordinary constables, sergeants, ordinary men, gentlemen in the police, men that never lift up a hand for any human being. Even if that person was rude, they are not rude. For the mere fact, they respect the calling to be a policeman. But there are some of the policemen that are really, really, I don't think they belong to the force. Because the police is something that the police must really start getting more friendly to our people. General, get rid of that rotten potato. If you are a policeman, you are there to look after your family, you are not there to destroy other people's lives. So get rid of them. They don't want to be. They don't want to be in such an important department of government. Because this is a very important department in front of us.
And I will say it again, this is the department that must keep order and safety and law in this country. But if some of the members of this department doesn't behave properly, how will the community behave properly? The police need the community. The community needs the police. We need each other. Today I'm an MP. Tomorrow I will be an MP, but I still need the police. It's very important. I thank you.
And all of that. I know some station commissioners are working with them, but in the process of creating relations, crime is committed. People's cattle are taken, or people are identified as stock thieves, and then get punished and called into the jail. So it's important to hear what works in terms of this AP picture would be undertaken. The other point relates to the, I think it's General Gettys, I think, that raised this point, and I'm one of those that at some point was quite present to the committee chair. In the beginning, we started with them this issue of the vehicles. He says now there are 40,000. And the general, in her opening remark, was saying that the fleet is in a bad state. So what is happening that, like, they were just adding, because our issues with the police at the time, the management at the time, you know, getting them, was that the vehicles are not serviced, contracted, you know, it was at management of those resources at the time, vehicle is not available, so. So it looked at it, what happened. They just bought new vehicles and no qualitative or quality or even disposing of those ones and place those. So just to get to share the light, because they have made that statement and now there's an indication that what we afford, we can't be proud of that, because then we need to get rid of some of those that now are counted at 40, compared to the 40 separate, just the new ones that are now functioning. Then the other strategic matter that was raised by the commissioner was the issue of gender balance, 50-50 and all that. Two questions there. We do get inquiries and complaints about the 2% equity. We would like to hear that in terms of a plan. With that question must be clearly put here, Chair, for a report, what they're going to be doing. But related to that is an issue of the welfare. We've now, my colleague has mentioned police brutality, but on the backside of that is the issue of the police themselves being injured and all of that. We would like to say, you know, just to hear each other, what do they do? Others get disabled in the process, and when they get disabled, some of them are forced to be boarded when they could take an in and while the employment equity as well is not met. So we'll have some light to be shared there. I know that we see with the defense, they have been made veterans and they are being taken care of and all of that. What work is happening in terms of the welfare of the police chair. I think let me stop here. I have one or two more that have just slipped my mind. Thanks.
Yes, Chair, there's another question I forgot about on the agency report. There were office consultants that were appointed to refurbish 200 Nyala vehicles before the end of February 2010. Two consultants were appointed, with one responsible for 140 vehicles, and the second consultant responsible for refurbishing 60 vehicles. The contract was awarded to a total amount of 79.5 million between the two consultants. So the amount escalated to 176 million. And then only 44 vehicles, about 22%, were delivered after the delivery date. No penalties were imposed on the contractor for the delivery of the vehicles. Why?
And why was the escalation so high? 79 was 79.5 to 176.7. It's almost double the money. It's a lot of money. And now he goes, I don't think it's such so expensive. So expensive. Then there's another last question. It's also on the... I don't know why it's a good engineer. I don't know, the people who are involved in this, I don't know why they're doing it. That adult basic education training paid out 10 million rand to a contractor for education and training contract, which saw three different contractors appointed for the same project at different times. The first, which was appointed at the cost of 3,545 rand per learner over 3-year period, and the second consultant were in partnership with each other. The department appointed a consultant to manage the internal audit function. And here is my problem. The department appointed a consultant to manage internal audit function at a cost of 29.3 million over a 3-year period. The cost increased by 17.2 million due to an extension. The contract was renewed for a further 3 years at a cost of 33 million. Why? What's happening in the department, as I'm asking you? Your supply chain and your IT, why is this thing happening? I just need clarity on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We note the questions that are being asked, and I will be helped by the team. I've just noted them, and if they come, I will allocate them to the various divisional commissioner consultants. I think you've raised three issues around the consultancy, issues around the firearm system, issues around the NIALAS, and issues around the APEC aspect. But perhaps before I ask members to answer, I say the issue of how consultants are defined is also an aspect that we need to look into in all these areas. These are areas where we do not have those in-house skills for ourselves as such. So these are service providers for us. They bring the skills that we are not having, and even if they come, those are the skills that maybe we can manage. We can learn how to maintain and manage what they deliver, but we would still go out to go and look for those type of services. And I think it's an important point just to base the discussions that are going to come in. We have been to SCOPA, we have been yesterday to our own portfolio committee, and I'm sure my divisional commissioners will be able to respond to some of the issues that you're raising. The issue of penalties, we find a weak point, and it talks to contract management within the it's an area that we prioritize, because we're saying if we give contracts to people, we must start looking at time aspects of completing those contracts, managing the contracts, you know, from an internal control point of view, as well as ensuring that mutually between the contractor and us of their penalty for those delays. So overall, generally, those are some of the things we're looking at as part of improvement. Let's start with the firearms system contract, and I'll ask General Mubani to touch on that.
Thank you, General, and thank you, Chair. As the General has said, we have been dealing with this matter at SCOPA and the Portfolio Committee, and at the risk of funding, like I brought up to those members who have been in those committees, I will repeat the explanation. The firearms control system is a great concern for us as management, because this project started in 2004. Now, in ICT, if the project goes over 3 years, we are going to have a problem, because technology changes, there is obsolescence of technology, the skills are mobile. In this environment, you lose people, they move to other areas. So the contractor had a big problem with his project. But let me just go into a bit more detail. The project itself happened at a time, I think it was the first project after the whole IT of the police was incorporated into CETA, which meant there was no internal capacity to do this project. It was the first project that we did after incorporating all the IT into CETA. Now the question might be, why did we not ask CETA to do the project? I think in hindsight that should have been a big mistake. We have other projects that CETA is doing for us. The e-Talk has been running also for along the same line since 2003. It's still not complete, and we have a big problem with CETA. So it would have been a mistake to do it via CETA. Now, be that as it may, the governance processes were not in place. We are actually in the process now, putting in place proper governance processes. For example, we have established an enterprise program management office, which, according to best practice, cannot do projects without the proper discipline of project management. In this case, that was lacking, unfortunately. The system itself, according to the contractor, and we are engaging CSIR to verify this for us as an independent party, it is 80% complete. Now, what happened was, after the award of the contract in 2004, four addendums were signed by the then head of the Information Systems Management, who had the full delegation to sign those addendums because she was given the delegation by the commissioner, national commissioner at that time. So in terms of the addendum, we have a system that was developed and implemented and actually running, the firearm payment system. It was linked to this project because it also has to do with firearms and the control of firearms at the police station. So that system has been rolled out to 1,090 police stations as we speak, and it is ongoing. The budget itself, almost 60% of the budget, was toward the system. Now the problem, I spoke earlier about the project governance being upset. When you plan a project, in a system development environment, it's not just the system itself. The system must run on technology. You must have the standards that are going to be used. All of that stuff was not catered for in the contract. The contract was specifically for the software. So the addendum then to acquire these solutions, for instance, acquired a lot of symbol scanners which are used at the police station. We acquired a lot of other technologies that was also not catered for initially in the contract. Again, it's poor planning. With the new Enterprise Program Management Office, the National Commissioner basically issued the instruction that our contract management should not have attendance because that's an indication of poor planning. So from now on, we are going to make sure that every project that we plan, we must look at all other dependencies so that we plan properly. And then I can mention other projects that are more or less in the same state as the farms project. The disputes with the suppliers resulted in a lot of delays. Now the supplier, as I said, as the time progressed, there are new technologies becoming available to do what we wanted to do. Just a summation, we have a system currently which is called the Firearms Registry System. The mainframe-based system, green screen and all of that. The decision was to develop a new system because it was determined at the time that to modify and enhance the mainframe system is going to be more costly because already it was an old technology that we want to phase out anyway. So developing a new system meant that we have to take the database, the current database of 7 million in the old system and translate that to a new database. That's where one of the delays happened. As an example, we wanted to translate the information to a new system, which means we must download the old database in the flat file, and then write a program to read the flat file and convert that into a new format.
Now, the farmer attends the old system as an example. In the eight fields, in the old system, he could have zero, he could have blank spaces. In the new system, the date field matches a number, it extracts a number. So the translation then fell apart, which again was the professionalism problem with the supplier. So the supplier did not really have the skills to do the translation. So that's where some of the delay came from. But in general, we have currently we terminate the services of the supplier because contractually contractors expired in our view, the supplier is disputing that. We terminated the service. We are engaging the CSR to work with us to ensure that the 80% completion of the main system is actually so, and also to develop a plan to actually complete the system from internal resources. We have put a team together who have been involved with the system, they understand the system, and we will be able to, in fact, our second aggressive target. In this financial year, 2013-14, we will complete the system. So that is on the other side. But there are things that we are waiting for. For instance, the senior council needs to give us an opinion on the legality and non-legality of the contract. But we have terminated services of the supplier. And we were carefully doing that. We did not say we are terminating the contract, because according to our legal opinion, that contract is no longer valid. But the supplier obviously argues that the terms of termination have not been met, so the contract is not is still valid. So that's the first thing. We also, in terms of the expenditure on the project, as I said, the process of setting addendum was provided for in the contract, and the head of the union, the component, had the necessary delegation of authority. However, the question is still, contract of 92 million ends up at 400 million. You know, is that fruitless expenditure or whatever? We have engaged the National Treasury to actually look at the contract and give us an opinion as to whether this was a fruitless expenditure or not. So that's what explained to the Auditor General, and they accepted that explanation. And lastly, I've mentioned that we have engaged the CSIR as an external party to basically assess, as an independent party, the completing state of the project. We're signing an MOU with the CSIR, and then within a week or two, we'll be able to commence the completion of the project. I'm not sure if I've answered all the questions.
Thank you, Gentlemen. As you said, on the CSIR matter, we know that government has been shot at by many suppliers of the technology sector. So the CSIR advisory council on our technology told us will be a standing matter for SAP. As and when we get into agreement, we would like them to be there as an advisory council on ESSOR and when the product is delivered. Thank you for that. The next one that we need to go into is the analysis that you've asked about, and I'll ask Andrew Cruiser to deal with that AG report on the analysis.
Thanks, Commissioner, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Just to sketch the background around the issue of the NALAS. The NALAS were first to do their assessment around the issue whether we should purchase new armored vehicles or utilize the armored vehicles which were in storage, because after 94, because they're military type vehicles, we're not using them in policing anymore. So all stored, they were not in use at that moment. We then did an analysis in terms of what it would cost to buy new vehicles and modern vehicles against repairing the vehicles. The cost of buying a new vehicle, of 200 new vehicles, came to over R1 billion. And based on that cost, they made a different decision as the police that it would be better to refurbish the vehicles cheaper, because also the clearing process would not meet the demands of the 2010. Intelligence reports and also the start of uprising candy also gave indication from us that we need to speed up the process for ensuring that we do have armored vehicles deal with the situation on the World Cup. A tender was put out procurement dealer to restore the vehicle to its original state. And this tender was awarded to two companies, as the member correctly said. One was a BAE, and the other one was a small BE company in terms of preferential procurement act. We then also decided to empower disadvantaged people so they can also get a seat. Otherwise, we'll continue to work with the big companies in the industry. So that's the reason why we split 80-20, 20% to the small company and 80% to the bigger company. The process after we issued the award, the tender, was to then get the vehicles, the massive heavy vehicles, as you know, to the provider so they could refurbish the vehicle itself. Now, we then had a basket in the tender process, basket of 48 items which we thought were the most likely items to be on with the vehicle. The whole list of them, 48 of them, like cam valves, oil filters, a number of things, gear boxes. We thought, we asked them again to make an analysis, and that's where we came to the amount of 79 million. We said, if we take this analysis of 48 things to be wrong, times the 200 windows, our assessment would be that it cost us about 79 million. We then, after issuing the tender, said every vehicle will have to go through a quotation process again, so we need double procurement on the vehicle. So the company stripped the vehicle in the presence of a qualified mechanic or staff, and in that process, we found that more parts were required than the 48 we estimated on the overall 200 vehicles. But after the quotation, it was certified, the qualified mechanic again went through the procurement and financial process. And therefore, the cost, because of our underestimation, became more. But we got value for money for every vehicle. If you take your car to a service, you might get the report that your cam valve is broken or something like that. So your cost of your initial service and the repair should be more. So that's how the cost estimated. And we do say, and we admit to the other committees, we could have estimated better by getting expertise maybe from the NOW or Armored Corps to assist us, because they are more experts in terms of the armored vehicle itself. So that is the process we followed in terms of the whole process. Just to add to say is that, as stipulated in our annual report last year, we have opportunity to rule on the matter. We agreed with the audit general that trade will make the final arbitration on the matter, because we could not agree that it's irregular. We concluded that we followed two procurement processes and the legitimate process itself. We do agree that we could have done a better basket to make the escalation less, but we're also convinced that we've got money from valuable money. The other thing is, in terms of 2010 program, the issue of legacy was very important for us. And the 200 NALAs are operational, I think, in general, well, I can take for them, all the other escalation, the door and the other thing, they are being utilized fully, and therefore we think we did get value for the money itself. Thank you.
Thank you. The last one that you raised was around our ABET, and maybe as a precursor to this, just to say that tender, the issues that were raised there, we are still of the opinion that ordinarily it shouldn't have been put the way it was, because it was more a question of the change of timing and that timing not documented in terms of the contract. In fact, we had a failing in that space. I'll ask Major General Gwena, assisted by General Cruiser, to talk a little bit on that.
Thank you, General Chairperson. I must indicate that the service provider fee in a joint venture with the was appointed in 2006 to deliver the AVET program. But the provider fee had promised at the beginning to use computer-aided training, and mainstream needed more money, which HRD refused. Now, provider C needed all those activities to provide the finalize the agent program, because initially they were on joint venture. Then another bid was advertised, and since provider D applied but fell short of due to non-compliance, and then he contested the appointment of another provider. These circumstances resulted in the late appointment of consultant E in November 2008. Training commenced in November 2008. The contractual period to present this AVET was 36 months, which is 3 years. Now, the terms of contract were amended without the written agreement. The reason was that Division HRD agreed with provider E to change contractual years to financial years. It was agreed that the first year would have started in November 2008 and end in 31st March 2009. The first pillar was agreed, that is 2009, by the two parties as the second financial year without documenting it. Now, ABEX is bribed Helena. The bribe of the first year was 3,800 Helena, the second was 4,085 Helena, and the third year was 4,510 Helena. Now, from the 5th of April 2009, service provider E was paid according to the second year cost. The Attorney General in their findings indicated that we then overpaid the provider by 157,444 rands. It is true that there was no contract with E, which was in fact written. There was a contract, but it was not written down. Firstly, at the end, there was no overspending in the full implementation of the project. Instead, savings were made because the project was completed in 29 months instead of 86 months, which then offset what appears to be overspending according to the Attorney General. The actual amount spent was 10,240,190 rand, which is less than what was budgeted for. An amount of 5 million per year was allocated and ring-fenced for ABEX during 2008-2009 financial year to 2010-2011 financial year, totaling 15 million over a 3-year period. Secondly, the quality service beyond expectation was delivered by the provider as it was delivered service based on the IEB, that is the Independent Examination Board Standard. And thirdly, the provider delivered and offered some learners with GETC, that is Full General Education and Training Certificate, which is first ever beyond what is expected of the ABET program. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Clearly, a lot of lessons for us from this exercise that was done by the AG. We have said contract management has come out as a weak point. We're managing that, we're looking into it. Secondly, we're looking at how we solve this whole issue of schedules. We find it problematic. Would like to look at use that if it is ever used in a much structured and monitored manner, but ordinarily we would never practice it the way it was practiced in the past. Thirdly, we are talking about enterprise project management, because that will ensure that we manage our projects and our procurement in a very structured and monitored fashion. Our internal controls would then be able to be managed also in terms of those processes. And I think from an SDM point of view, with General Cruiser at the helm there, we're looking at a very different way of managing our SDM. And I do believe that there are good lessons, and we would be taking those forward and would be able to give progress on how we're doing, and part of the progress is seeing us less and less in some of those reports, and without sounding off, I just look at the size of our budget, and you look at, compared to other departments, there is still some level of focus and robust management of those resources by the police, that we continue to improve ourselves. Okay. Maybe let's go to this. I'll jump to the quick questions that we can deal with. The third one on the split, to say human resources and other resources split. I think it's been addressed in terms of our presentation here, even the targets that we've given. Police are human resource intensive output. The service that we put out there and the product for consumption depends on people. So the split that we are having ranges from anything between 70 and 75 people, because it's people, and then you need tools to drive what people are doing, and 30% going to our tools and other processes. So the target that we've shared with you today is that we're targeting about 74% now, but we're saying we want to oscillate between 70 and 75% of our human resources, and at any given time, the balance of, say, 25 to 30 sitting on tools. We're very mindful of what we see, for instance, in the Department of Education, where they are seriously constrained in terms of their tools. So So we must manage that balance very tightly as a department. And I think there was a slide that Andras Kete shared to show the spread of the I don't know what slide number that is, the spread of the of the 70% to see where actually does it go. It shows that maybe if you're able to get that is it. You know, just to talk about the compensation to say where is the 50% going to general sector. Okay. I think we can talk to it quickly.
Thank you. It's approximately, we don't want to move beyond 75%. We're currently standing at 74, versus 26 in terms of compensation and other operational expenditure. We try to maintain that balance in order to have operational side, goods and services and capital also in relation to compensation. Otherwise, you could move very easily if you don't monitor it. You could very easily, at some point, only pay compensation, salaries and so forth, and don't really have the operational funds in order to execute your function. And it's particularly that 50 billion that you see there, 50.4 billion over the total, and that is where, as we determined in the past, it appears like an adequate ratio. What sometimes makes this vary is the moment you get a salary increase in here, sir, if you get additional funds for that salary increase from 1 to 12, now, in our environment, the salary increase of, let's say, 5.37% on 1 to 12 is 2.3 billion. The moment you get 2.3 billion more on the one side, your weight changes, becomes more. That is why we're watching this thing so clearly, because there will be some carry through and new salary increases probably in this year. But the fact of the matter is we're trying to maintain that ratio and say to ourselves if we can basically stay. And it is in a performance indicator, but it's based on the numeric aspects. So I hope it, you know.
Thank you. I think the other important thing that one might mention that may help is that determining the establishment becomes very important, because we start saying, and he mentioned the establishment, you say, we sit here close to 199. Yeah, because we then say, whatever we do, for us to achieve this 70%, our establishment has to be determined. So we work within it. We're building now with a process that we call stabilization and normalization, so that every person of the inner box that has got funds, that talk to our structure. And then we don't really need just create positions around establishment. So establishment management becomes very, very critical for our work. Then there are two questions that I would like to join. The power loan and the capital wealth program, which will come in there. But one, General Cruiser will lead us on those issues. And then I'd like also, as we talk about that, you raised the issue around station facilities, the upgrading, the maintenance, you will also touch on that. And may I ask General Mutiba to touch on management of cells, because you have also raised an underlying issue around how we are managing ourselves and our facilities in terms of police who are supposed to take care of those. Okay.
Thanks, General, Honorable Chair and members. I'll give an issue of the criteria we use to build these stations itself. We go to the process of translating to establish it, and we started our organization development, which is a work study. They conduct a work study based on location and accessibility to police stations, on the present police stations and accessibility for people, the present crime statistics, population growth in that particular area, the demographic of the policy. They then go through a process of consultation with the provincial commission on a particular problem, the local community in terms of that area, the NGOs in that particular area, and other departments which might be affected by the services in terms of those things. These approved work studies are then consulted with all the relevant provincial commissioners, who then prioritize in terms of their province, in terms of their needs, and they then put on the user asset management system and escalate it to us at national level. The prioritization process is then given to an infrastructure committee, who then takes all provincial plans which are limited in terms of budget, and they reprioritize that plan on the user estimate. If we look at the continuity of the current police stations where the leases arise, we look at the conditions of the current police stations, accessibility of the current police facilities, and utilization of the current police stations in the area. The final priorities are then presented to the top management, the nurse mission, and the top management, where we make a final decision in terms of our area plan for the police stations itself. So that's the whole process we use. We're always competing priorities from all provinces and itself. Once we've approved that, we then allocate funds, and I think in the new plan, as indicated, we are before we only to measure the finishing of stations. And I think we had challenges with our dependency, probably work on our own challenges internally. But we've now decided to take it in phase approach so we can manage the process in terms of the whole continuum. We are first going to measure site clearance, because once we try them and they're policing that particular area, it must go to environmental assessment, geo report, whether it's accessible to water and electricity in those areas before we can even draw up a plan. Which is something I think, so that is the first thing we allocate and we'll measure that from the start. Once the site clearance is issued by the Department of Environment, we then start with planning and design, which means drawing up the specification, drawing up the plan, and going out on tender, either through ourselves or through public works, which is the main process of public works. Once that's been approved, the next process will allocate money to the issue of construction and execution of that process. So we've been monitoring and measuring all those processes now, from the beginning, right, the whole continuum of that process itself. So that is the basic process where we use to prioritize stations itself. The details on that particular station in memory, I don't have, but we can come back to the details on particular station.
You can send them to the committee, deal with own buildings as an issue that has been raised.
There was another question over the 1.3 billion rand the name was raised. That money, 1.03 billion, is allocated to the building of new police stations, capital work. That's not for anything, there's another budget for anything. That's only allocated to the issue of capital works. What we have a challenge in terms of, I think, our focus is on building new police stations and neglecting the issue of making of the present stations. So we also looked at the strategy in terms of, we also have to ensure that we maintain and keep the balance in having new services and keeping the current services. We have a big plan maintenance project called the Wolf Station, which we are going to the public works, which we are implementing, where we have to put that station back to the original form without burning. But in plan maintenance and the public works policy, we may not build it, but we can refurbish it to the original form. So we are busy and we have numbers on the and in the plan in terms of how many stations we have to do in terms of that. And public works has a number. Addition to that, we have a challenge on day-to-day maintenance itself. We are busy with the national strategy to employ more artisans in the police, which will place at the custodial level. Because the provincial police and operational ones are busy with policing and crime. So we want to have a specific focus for people who deal with the issue of ensuring that the conditions of the buildings stay fixed in terms of the with the other access to 100,000 prisoners, they to fix the building, the glass is broken, you can fix it yourself in order. Also put in front of those contracting places so they can access this material more easily presently to ensure that we look after our buildings in the perspective itself.
So that's one of the things I'm looking at in the structure that we're working on, is ensuring that there's a dedicated facilities management, because if we don't have that, we just look at the building, we forget that we have existing buildings that must build dedicated services for. General Mutiba, there are a number of things that you need to deal with. It's the self-management of ourselves, the food, medical treatment and quality thereof, and I'm sure the provincial commissioners can also assist you, and the escape from those cells that we are managing. Can you start, and then if there are any additional inputs from some of our pieces, I would welcome them.
Thank you, General, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members. In terms of the cells, the Division Supply Chain Management, in cooperation with the Provincial Commissioner Station Management, they are constantly looking at the conditions of our cells, and that's looking at the maintenance thereof. We're having another chapter and aging infrastructure. Some of our police stations are very much old, and the same will apply to the cells. When we try to house our detainees under acceptable conditions. In terms of the food, our prisoners, Honorable Chairperson, are getting 3 meals a day in the morning, during the day, as well as in the evening. And the tariff has been prescribed by our Division Supply Chain Management, General Cruiser's Division. And Chairperson, we must realize that prisoners must not expect to get the same meals that they will get at home, because there are people who always want to choose what they would like to have. But we look at especially medical conditions. Someone say the doctor has said I must eat the following. The station management always look at that within the budgetary allocation of the LAPS, Honorable Chairperson. And where there are medical conditions, we do refer these prisoners to hospital, and we also carry the cost of the medical treatment at the hospitals. In respect of the escaping Chairperson, in the first 3 quarters of the financial year, there 776 detainees have escaped out of a number of 1,446,340. If a person look at the percentage, Honorable Chairperson, our point of departure is there should be no person escaping. That is the point of departure. With all escapings where more than one person has escaped, and there's a team that go and investigate how is that escaping occurred. The provincial commissioners appoint teams to investigate. In most of the cases, Chairperson, we found that our own members were negligent. People escape out of the cells, they escaped out of the detective offices, other people at the court cells as well. And we do charge members, Honorable Chairperson, that some of our members who have been dismissed for negligence. But we must, Honorable Chairperson, also point out that there are challenges some of our special court cells. There's a number of escapes from the court cells. Some of the court cells are in a very, very bad condition. And unfortunately, Chairperson, these people have been arrested. They must be housed in these cells. We engage the Department of Justice in this regard. In the same way that we are looking at the conditions of our own cells, we are also engaging the Department of Justice also to look at the conditions of the court cells. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, in general.
Thank you. I think the other thing that we're looking at is just cleanliness of our premises, whether it's a police station or whatever. So the whole issue of cleanliness is high on our agenda. Because when we terminated the contract that we did, we reduced and cut our dress according to the flow that we were having. And clearly there are gaps in it. So it's an area that we're also looking at to just bring in that discipline of appearance of our environment. The next question that was pushed to us was around issues of discipline. I think there are two aspects there. It's discipline, how do we train experts for discipline? To say, as and when we train the new police and they go out, what's the training menu for that aspect, for the newcomers? And for that, I'll be asking General Wayne to talk to us about some of the curriculum offerings they are having around that matter and whether it is sufficient. We have most beautiful code of conduct, but I don't know whether we're teaching the walking and the ingraining of that protocol. So you'll talk to that. The second aspect of that discipline issue, you raise it in a different manner. It's how we're managing discipline amongst our own members from an HR point of view. And I would be upfront to say, in my 7 months or 8 months now, I still have an issue with our dispute, but I will engage the officials and I'll ask General Mazibu to touch a little bit on that, because maybe we have weaknesses in how we structured our discipline programs, and it's an area that we will be revisiting. Major General Gwena.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, National Commissioner. I must indicate that insofar as our training is concerned, starting from the basic training, the members there are being taught discipline. I must indicate that the SAPS is a paramilitary organization with drills, as the committee knows, with a certain level of culture that is within the organization, and that's where we start with our discipline insofar as the organization is concerned. They are taught ethics, they are being taken through the processes, through role play to indicate what kind of conduct is not acceptable in society, more especially in dealing with people that they're going to work with outside. There's special emphasis on human rights and the constitution itself, that is now at base training level. In all our academies, that is our colleges, all the members who attend mostly are wearing uniform, even the detectives, to reinstill, go back to the basics insofar as discipline is concerned. At 7:30, if any member of the committee can go to any of our trainees, it will indicate, just like a school, there's no one looking around. Everybody is either in class or on parade. That is the more emphasis on discipline. It escalates to the senior management in power, where we are providing management and leadership programs. Again, there is the reinstilling of discipline, specific emphasis on command and control, so far as our members. The business ethics, that's what we are teaching our members, to ensure that they maintain the discipline even outside the organization, even when dealing with members of the community. Thank you.
Thank you, General. Thanks, Honorable Chair, as well, Honorable Members. The issue of discipline in the police has been a challenge now for some time because of the framework that has been in place. To look at the whole issue of discipline. It has not been strong enough to sustain the kind of character that is expected of every police officer that comes out of the training institutions. But it has also been further weakened by other forces of development through the increasing influence of forces such as the trade unions, where a number of steps taken to instill command and control have been undermined by outcomes of other processes instituted to oppose those efforts to instill discipline. In November, we have since revised that framework. We've got a new framework now that is more favorable to commanders than to employees, which is going to be implemented very soon. That is going to see to it, for example, that a commander or a supervisor is able, when it's empowered, to handle the disciplinary matter, finalize it within 5 days. Whereas with the current regulations, that is not possible to do. So the whole advice of discipline management is being reviewed, and then it is being improved to deal exactly with the kind of ill discipline that we're seeing out of there. I can also indicate that at another level, the number of police members that have been detected that we have committed criminal activities and have been convicted but are still within the police is still also being dealt with a view of ensuring that it is used as a deterrent and that it is not allowed to continue. That what the department is supposed to be dealing with criminality, with what elements that they themselves are tainted. So there are also gaps somewhere that we are looking at and closing in order to make sure that the department is rid of the elements of ill discipline as well as the criminal, the good criminal conduct. Thanks, Chair.
I just want to say, and I'm going to engage my leadership on this, but I'll be engaging them on this. Even the framework that we signed in November is inadequate, because the agreement that we signed in the agreement 2 of 2009, I think there's a fundamental flaw there. We made discipline a negotiation element, not in a paramilitary environment. You cannot negotiate discipline. It is your sanction, it is your punishment. it is unique that you are dealing with it, but sign an agreement that says we negotiate discipline. We can't help that way, and we need to revisit it and look at it, because it's a fundamental flaw, and it carries through even in this new agreement, because you are starting to say, I mean, defense would never negotiate discipline, but we negotiate discipline, which is a problem. But we will engage as leadership to look at how we're going to do with it going forward, because when I looked at that agreement, I said, major is a weak point in terms of how we deal with discipline. Okay. The improvement of FCM, do you want to say a sentence to that, General Chris? Have you already touched on it? Or do you want to say something?
Thanks, General. Generally, if you look and even the state of the portfolio committee, there was issues raised around our procurement process. And we've really looked in terms of course our biggest challenge was not at the valuation with which Sunaka went, but at the lower level at the PEC, where they evaluate the bids itself, where the possibility for interference is much greater. We've also got the people who get the points and proper specifications are the experts. We only as FM facilitate the process. We have now, and the NASMIS has also given us instructions that especially on very technical issues, we will bring independent like CSRR and other experts we use for the cell phone, new cell phone tend to use CASA to ensure that the special gains are neutral in the NASMIS. Because otherwise, if you have people in the police joining applications to certain companies, it has some influence in terms of how the bed works in the end. So we put those things in place. The other thing very important we put in place, we also saw the interference in the process of when bids are dropped at supply chain. Someone could take up the tax. We now have a general receiving who is not involved in the bid itself, receiving every bid, certifying what's in the bid and the price and all those things, and then seeing it in the evidence bag, which cannot be only opened by the chairperson. So when the support, our administration staff bring the documents and make the presentation to the chair and the BEC, they can see what was delivered there at the beginning. So we're trying to tighten the gap in terms of where people have opportunities to manipulate the system itself. So yes, I think we are trying to improve those things on also other areas in terms of life cycle for everything. We have time frames and all our different in our new performance for the new year. So when what is the tenders received, when they must be renewed, how many times they ask for those. So we put a time frame for all the things to speed up and ensure we get better services to the other divisions and provinces in that process. Thanks, Chair.
Perhaps just to top of that one of the things that are high on my agenda is that SAPS is the buyer. We cannot be controlled by anybody outside us. If he is the buyer, we'll call the shop, we'll call the tent. And those adulterated processes we will deal with also as part of our SDM improvement.
Thanks. The issue of the fleet, I think, was also the one of the members. We now have a fleet of 51,000 at the latest figure itself, I think. We stand at the end of February, that's the latest figure I got, and some of the levels. So we have made a significant increase. Our ratio is now under 4. Our target is 4.5, we're under 4 in terms of managed vehicle itself. So we've significantly increased, I think, not only the numbers, but also the quality in terms of that. We have an asset register now which indicates to us how many vehicles should be at every station and what kind of vehicles should be at every station in every unit itself. And we're trying to use that in terms of future procurement, in terms of the police, so we can ensure that when vehicles are purchased, they go to where they are procured for the reason they are procured for in the future.
Maybe you can just finish off your garage turnaround strategy.
Yeah, we also have a serious challenge with our garages. We put a turnaround strategy in place itself. Part of the strategy is around the issue of one of the things, HR, to ensure that we have sufficient personnel, first of all. Secondly, properly qualified and correctly paid personnel around those issues. The second thing is to ensure that we have proper performance management systems in the garages, so we're measuring every mechanic in terms of the work and the output and outcome of those issues. We are revising the functions and processes in terms of financial and procurement in the garages. We think there's a big stumbling block in terms of that process, and we have definitely made much gain to that. We've optimizing the garage infrastructure and technology. We have a big challenge around the infrastructure, not the technology. We buy better machines so they can, and better tools so they can do the thing better. We're revising the accessibility, only doing accessibility studies on the structure so we can put the garage closer to where the stations need them and things there. In the process, we are putting, for instance, mobile garages so we can get to the rural areas with two mechanics and assistant and go serve with the cars at the point of delivery and not being into the garage with lots of control. So there's a whole broad general strategy which we implemented and that has approved. We will continue to implement this program in the year as they are front students of our issues. And we will continue to report to the National Forum to the National Commission on progress of those classes.
May I then just ask the one or two of the provincial commissioners to talk to professionalism, discipline and brutality issues that confront them on a day-to-day basis as they manage the process?
Madam Chairperson, thank you very much. As we all know that currently police are under spotlight when it comes to the action and the attitude of our police officers. And for us as provincial commissioners, the one thing that we try to do is to make sure that the discipline and the command and control at the lowest possible level has been dealt with. Example, we had a case in one of my stations where the station commander didn't take the action. So at this point in time, while we suspend and dismiss the reservists involved, we also suspended the captain, who was the immediate commander of that reservist. And also action will be taken against the station commander for the fact that he didn't take the necessary action. So at a lower level, we try to instill that discipline. And also we go into with internal engagements with our own members to just to motivate them, to lift their morale, but also to lead them the riot act when it comes to the action of them and the attitude towards service delivery of in the different TSCs and also attending to complaints. So that's the ongoing process. So as management of provinces, we go out to our members at the lowest possible level so that they can also understand what the direction is of the African Police Service.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I'm coming from Gauteng. I think currently Davidson is the issue that has been topical for the past 3 weeks, which is an unfortunate and regrettable incident. We as management, nationally and provincially, pronounce ourselves in terms of the behavior of those that are involved. And of course, one has to talk in terms of the problem systematic. If you listen to the National Commission in terms of how we deal with discipline, command and control results how we manage discipline when, particularly negative discipline when there are contraventions as they say. The brutality of the police can also be linked to the abuse of power. Now forced use. But there is also another form of abuse of power in terms of corruption. I think a lot of the members spoke about what we do, what are we doing in the police in terms of dealing with corruption internally. So the question that is not dealt with, it is dealt with and deal with it effectively. I can talk about my province that in 2 years, 965 members have been arrested for serious crimes, various crimes, and some very, very serious crimes, which is indicative that there is a problem that we're supposed to be dealing with. But due to the fact that there are labor laws that we have in place that we have to comply with, you know, one of the pressures that we have is that, make an example of activity in court, that we were under pressure to say, are these people suspended? But if you look at the terms of our regulation, the people that the must be 48 hours that you give to the people, they respond better to why they shouldn't be suspended, which is actually difficult in any labor environment. So there are issues that we need to be dealing with if we want to be deal, you know, chemically with the discipline that we have. Often another 65 that I spoke about is only, you can talk about only 203, 204 that are currently dismissed in the environment, which is actually not even a quarter of those that are arrested, which becomes a problem. So I think these are the matters that as this leadership of the police who are busy dealing with, and it's encouraging also to listen to the National Committee say, we to go back to the drawing board before we even implement the new dispensation that we're going to be having. Say if we want to have a proper command and control, we need to be in a position to manage the consequences. One of the things, maybe lastly, General, that one has to talk on this particular issue of the brutality.
A week later, sorry, a week and a half later, in the same place, a cop is killed, was killed, in the same rank where it is. Some of these things get highlighted when it's happening in the police, but one would actually love to see the equal energy when the police are subjected to it. If you look in terms of the jungle they're aware, in terms of the crime and criminality, is actually brutal. Cops are actually brutalized almost every day. You pick up the cop, even this few days, there's a cop that is shot. So you do see that it does not hit the headlines, it never hit the international news. But if you go to other countries, if a cop is shot, it becomes a serious thing because the state is being attacked, is being challenged. So those are the things that we have to contend with. What we are to be dealing with crime, we have to be dealing and managing the perception that is out there. I must also say the minister went into the place to call the cops to address the community. The perception is different when you listen to the community in terms of what is happening, in terms of their interpretation of the situation on the ground. But you'll never see those things being reflected. I was there, talk to the community, listen to the views that were coming out there. We will be responsible in terms of making sure as well that the internal civilian oversight by the community policing forums that are legislated, that they participate in ensuring that they are guarding us in terms of the abuse of power that is there. Thank you very much.
And before I recognize General Tolle, we would like to say to you that Nabongabantu, please, and we seek support also in terms of assisting us to project the fact that they are also people. We see it everywhere. It's Dayton, it's Marikana, it's elsewhere. We're not talking about those type of issues. So it is important for us to also mention the fact that where I was talking about reaching out to communities and increasing our spend on communicating and outreach processes, we can only help ourselves as police by doing that, because it's an area that we haven't done most. We've done a lot of inward focus, but it's the negotiation that I will bring to the table when we cut the hate gender.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Honourable. Yeah, I'm just adding to what my other colleagues, provincial commissioners, have spoken to. I think one, obviously, we do not tolerate corruption, and we all put all the measures in place to that we can calm the numbers. But I just wanted to add that over and above the problem that we experience, either with police brutality or behavior, we're also looking at climate studies, organizational climate studies that we conduct in order to come to what exactly is the root cause. And what came out here from some of the issues raised by honorable members was also the welfare of police, because we also want to know exactly what is it that is wrong? Is it maybe the leadership? Is there some kind of behavior that is causing this so that we address the root cause? The other aspect that we're also looking at is improving the quality of leadership, so that we look at does the type of leadership that we present maybe create a conducive climate that can support the behavior of police. But there's also other aspects that we're looking at, which I think the National Commissioner, among other people, has spoken to. We're also asking ourselves the question, is the societal problem not a contributory factor? And we're then looking at community education, targeting the change of mindset and paradigm shifting of communities also, but then working with other disciplines. Then we're also then encouraging other things such as creating the patriotic awareness within the police, like looking at patriotic education, because the moment we encourage police not to work for money but work for the country, I think we've got few of them that are doing that. But then we also reward honest, because some of the police, they become very honest and they serve communities. It's like, for instance, also in my province, I've got an example of a constable who rejected 4,000 for selling a case of cat to communities. and this constable came forward and he said, they want to buy me with this particular $1,000 to sell the ticket. And we set a trap, we arrested those people. But then after all, we gave this particular constable a reward of 10,000 rand in cash, just to encourage him and reward him honestly. And first, the national commissioner gave another 10,000 to the same constable. And that's sending an SAE, that was using their reward. But then we encourage and ensure that operational readiness of our members is attended to every day so that they can be able to confront situations head on and would be ready without maybe displaying other behavior that relates to coming. Thank you.
I'll come to you when you do the rule of things, then you can touch on those. General Mawen, offshore deployment.
Thank you, my general. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members. With regard to external deployment for police officers to do peacekeeping operations within the region, yes, we do send police officers under the umbrella of the UN. Currently, we have police officers in South Sudan, 16 of them, including the deputy commissioner. We have deployed them under the UN Resolution 6576 of 8/2011. And that kind of an operation, we call it the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, in short, UNMISS. The second operation whereby we are deploying is under UN Resolution 1769 of the 31st of July 2007. And it is called the United Nations African Union Mission in Darfur, in short, UNAMID. We will be deploying 53 police officers. We are currently waiting for the visas to be issued to those police officers. And these police officers undergo a relevant training which is provided by the UN. Thank you, my general.
Very much. Then we can move on to the rural safety issues you raised. And there were very pertinent questions that were raised around Nyasi and issues around Free State. And then I will ask General Mkhiba to touch broadly around rural safety issues briefly. General Mboveni to deal with the issues that you raised, in particular around KZN, and then all those issues around, is it Skepe or all those and the safety issues. If we can just embrace all those questions around this one. General Mkhiba.
Thanks, General, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Honorable Chairperson, the Rural Safety Strategy was approved and launched by the National Commissioner, the previous National Commissioner, General Gele, in the Free State in July 2011. And having a number of pillars, amongst others, dealing with issues of crime in the rural safety, in rural environment, enhancing police-community relations, but also specifically the issue of stock theft. Now, we have piloted the project in the Free State, in Harrismith, as well as in the Eastern Cape, in Tunu, where we have obtained quite good results, especially in the Eastern Cape, with a big reduction of stock theft. In the coming financial year, Honorable Chairperson, and I'm very much happy that the National Commissioner has approved that we extend the scope of the rural safety to include other stations, to include other provinces as well. All the provinces have launched the rural safety project and they are busy, but especially with the pilot project, Honorable Chairperson, we're looking at to deal with the issue of stock theft, including now the uniform members, because in the past, the issue of stock theft was only was the responsibility of the stock theft unit, and they were dealing with the investigation part. Now, in cooperation with our division HRD, the training, we are capacitating
the visible policy members so that they can be in a position to assist in addressing stock debt. There's a number of challenges, Honorable Chairperson, amongst others, the pound legislation, where the pounds have now been given the responsibility of the municipalities. Some of the pounds have been outsourced to individuals, and you find that every person is doing like they want. This person would say, if I confiscate your stock, you must give me a cow, you must give me a sheep. We had an issue in the Free State, and I want to commend General Stolle, the way he dealt with the issue of this private pound. And the National Commissioner has emphasized that we need to look at that. Our legal service is looking at that. There's a number of legislation in the rural environment, Chairperson, that we as the South African Police Services were not happy with. And our legal service, in cooperation with the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, were dealing with that. Thank you, General and Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, my General Tierham, for the opportunity maybe to also make a comment. Maybe firstly to request, General, that I also wanted to throw in my voice on the issues of discipline as well as unprofessionalism in the police. General, we, as you have already said to us previously, we totally, as provincial commissioners, are saying that we will not tolerate any kind of unbecoming behavior of our members. So therefore, ensuring that their misconduct, files are being opened against them and that we take steps against them. I'm saying this, General, because one of the other things that I thought maybe I should bring to the attention is that about a week ago, there were some of the members in prison that were arrested for two for corruption, soliciting bribes from the committees, and of course, with the assistance of the IP, we were able to arrest them, but only to find out that there was an additional member. And our concern was that when this third member was being arrested, it was also found that we then looked into the performance of the member. We then discovered that not only fraud and corruption is disease, but it also has an impact in terms of service delivery, in terms of investigation and so forth. We are being citizen as the management of the police and the leadership of General Chiaha that we shall do our best to make sure that those that are behaving in a manner that is unbecoming, we deal with. But also on the same right, I think we should also appreciate the effort that has been taken by our Minister for the Police to ensure that IP is there, so that we as a police, if we are unable to police ourselves at some point, IP should be there to make sure that they deal with those issues. Chairperson, General, going to the issue of the stock theft that has been raised by the honourable member that has already left. It was going to be good, Chairperson, if the honourable member was here, but nonetheless, I'm still going to be providing feedback. I thought maybe in terms of the question that the honourable member has raised, raising the concern around the escape, that the approach in terms of my response will be, number one, firstly, one of giving hope, and number two, going to what are the talking to the scale itself. Maybe the first line of my response, in general, is to give hope to the community and to the house that is here. That in KwaZulu-Natal, we are aware that as the biggest province in the country, we are actually the country that is contributing, I think, about 80% of the stock theft in the entire country. So, if, for example, we were to reduce the stock theft, we should also be looking into KwaZulu-Natal. Average per year, we're losing about 6,500 stock that is being stolen. Of course, with a very good number of successes in terms of the arrest, in terms of community engagement. But I also think, Chairperson, one of the other things that we have agreed as management to address the stock theft in KwaZulu-Natal, we have agreed as management to say that perhaps the visibility of the stock theft units have not been sufficient enough. What we have agreed upon as management, we have agreed that we shall mark the stock theft units so that as they're moving around, they are able to be visible. Maybe Chairperson, to indicate to the House that there was no attempt
It's one of the areas whereby the terrain is not the same as in other areas. Unfortunately, we are a mountainous province. We are not a flat area like other areas. I'm saying this because there's a lot of mountains, there's a lot of bushes, and there's a lot of... We have some city, we have some suburbs, we have some rural, and we have also some very, very rural areas. The areas that we have seen recently, Matara, more in Kumaroi, the areas from Muden, more around the Great Town. It actually indicates the type of complexity that one faces as far as policing is concerned. Among the other things that we have agreed, General Pierre and Chairperson, to improve, to do in our area to deal with the success, we have agreed that we shall give more attention to our traditional structures. In this instance, we will all know that in the KwaZulu-Natal, we've got the provincial chairperson of the House for Traditional Leaders, in this instance, the Lingosi there, who is going to be assisting us in terms of talking to the community and, of course, mobilizing and waiting campaigns as far as the discouragement of the stocks of the consent. The chairperson, I think, is also mentioning that the success at some point, it's not only the police that must come in, but we need collaboration. In this instance, we need culture, because most of this area, they fall under our policy, the traditional system, and also need the involved culture in the sense of bidding for us the camp, as it was alluded to by the colleague. We also need the Department of Agriculture at some point to assist the police in terms of brand making of the stock, because most of the time it has been dealt with so by the police. But with the engagement that has been happening between police as well as the departments that I've mentioned, there is an indication that there's going to be more as far as this case is concerned. Maybe also Chairperson, to bring the hope to the House that is here, we have agreed as management that also further to address the issue of stock. We will be requesting funds to capacitate the investigation of the stock set at the state level, because what has been a challenge is that the stock set is more based in terms of the units, which at some point they are about 50 kilometers away from where the people are. And of course, with the budget that has been presented by General Skate, we hope that we also going to get our fair share on the budget as it has been presented. Lastly, on the issue of schedule, I want to mention and on record that I haven't briefed my National Commissioner General Pierre about the SCAP. But the brief background of the SCAP is that it's an, one of the, can we then say, the grouping that was established around 2008, that was initially formed around Mutu, if we all know Mutu, around the area. That is where this formation and grouping started, and as my police management, we have discouraged the existence of such grouping. Not only did they grow and mushroom as get, but they mushroomed in the rural areas. Others call themselves Umkumbila Noah, and so forth and so forth. We had a position and have a position as the police that these were the groupings that we're not going to allow, because most of them, as the honourable member has indicated, they were engaging in criminal activities, assaulting and murdering people at some point. But there has been a development in our province, General Tierra, as far as these groupings are concerned. Not only is it one grouping, there are actually about 12 of them. There is work that has been done by the Department of Community Safety Liaison in terms of bringing them together. I know they have they have drafted the constitution. They have been busy trying to integrate themselves as they are operating independently with the community policing board forum. So there is work that is still in progress, and I think it is proper and appropriate to say that at this point in time, it is a matter that is being handled by our Honourable MEC Willis Nkunu from the Department of Transport, Community Safety, and of course there will be some progress in terms of ensuring how best to be made that the grouping that is existing currently actually conforms to the legal prescript of the law. Thank you, General. That is in brief what I wanted to.
Thank you. The last but one issue, the 2% on disability, on equity issues.
Thank you, General, Honorable Chair and members. The police and the department is still at about 0.86 in terms of compliance with this prescript. The problem or the challenge is that the nature of the police work is such that there's a lot of emphasis on physical fitness. The requirement when it comes to enlistment is that people need to be able to do certain things when they are assessed for fitness to be recruited as police officers. This includes a certain physical assessment, medical assessment. In other words, there is no room for certain impairments for people to be successfully recruited. This has severely limited the ability of the department to access the labor market of people with disabilities in order to meet this prescript. However, with the vacancies that exist in the support environment, as and when we advertise those vacancies and we undergo the selection process, we do prioritize people with disabilities. And that's where most of them are currently found. That's where most of these 0.86 comes from, that is currently within the department. There are very few that can be found in the operational environment. It will be a type of disability that doesn't interfere with the person's ability to function operationally, but there are very few, as I've mentioned. In terms of what is happening to address that, the department has added the targeting of the people with disability in its targeted recruitment program. Thanks, Chair.
The last two aspects, really, one sentence, one sentence. Employee health and well-being related issues that were raised. It is interesting that we were talking about infrastructure and maintenance thereof. It's an input driver in terms of our output of services and products. And we have said 70% of our budget goes to people, which is another major input driver. We do need to look at our EHW because that's the maintenance and management of that input driver being people. So it's we have it, but I think it's an area that we will get on to discussing as management to say, is it well resourced? Is it doing what it's supposed to be doing? What else do we need? Because we must also manage and maintain and oil this other input driver being people. And then there was an issue around the veterans. I think, again, it's an area that we haven't quite engaged as management. The whole issue around recycling of skills that are now retired, we can look at some recycling processes and using some of those people with skills that are pensioned, but we haven't looked into those. It's an idea that we need to explore. I think that covers all the questions that we asked. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable. Let me take the opportunity to thank you, the provincial commissioners and other members of the police management for the presentations, and also indicate that while we will condemn the unbecoming behavior and the police brutality, we will also give credit where it is true, where the police are doing good. We are aware of some key successes, which are made by the police, like the reduction in crime categories, the equipping of the detectives and the telegrams in the forensic science laboratories. And those are the things which we hope that the media will also publish and say that the police are doing good. We will also make sure that during the debates, members also emphasize that and indicate that while there are those challenges that the police are faced with, there are also those good things that the police are doing, and we wish you well with your team, and we hope that you will manage to bring down the levels of crime in our country and make our people feel safe. Thank you very much.